Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
A couple weeks ago, I got a text. Was that you? Yeah, yep. It was. Yep. It feels so good when I get to start the show like that.
Especially after,
But we're here.
Yes.
And
speaking of your back, mm-hmm. we should, because a lot of people have been asking. And yes, we were not here last week because Johnny's back really, really, really mm-hmm. went out. And now there is another epidural in your future.
Yes, yes, yes. So it completely went out two times in 6 weeks, but who's counting? Mm-hmm. And the first time I was picking up a pen to write a check, and the second time I was picking up a fork. Nothing serious, like, you know, picking up a suitcase or something. No.
That's the weird thing. Just about every time, the very first time it happened, Johnny and I were in an Outback.
Yes.
She's reaching across the table to get a French fry. Her back goes out.
And I said, okay, God, I get it. Don't eat the French fries. Leave them be. And I kind of crawled out of the seat, and it wasn't as bad as these last two episodes, yeah. because these last two episodes, I couldn't sit, so I couldn't get my car to come to work so that I could stand for 5 hours. And if I took pain meds, you don't want to hear me then, because it gets really interesting.
I've got the tapes.
You've got the tapes? Yeah. I know. I thought so. Yes. All giggly, and, you know, I'm all about being serious, a serious broadcaster.
Yes,
that's
yes.
why I'm here tonight.
We have a plethora of things to get to tonight.
We do. And
we will share it with you after we say hi to the assembled multitude over in the newsroom. There would be your Ron. Hey, Ron.
Hey, how are you doing? Glad to have you back here. Hope you're feeling better, Johnny.
Yes, yes. I think the... It was so funny when I started to scream, and I realized, oh, that's probably not a good idea, because I'm screaming from my yeah. my diaphragm and just, you know, mm-hmm. So anyway, we were talking sports in the newsroom. Cubs not so good, but the Sox are playing right now, right, Ron?
The Sox are underway right now, yeah.
Okay.
And I believe I have these statistics right. The Sox have now exceeded all their wins from last season.
Mm-hmm.
B, since the All-Star break, they have more home runs than any team in the majors.
Watch out for the Sox.
Which is crazy.
I'm not just because I'm a Sox fan, but it's exciting to watch.
It is.
They're not giving up in the second half of the game.
Or falling apart in the seventh.
Yeah.
That's was my frustration. I would leave the room in the seventh. I'm like, no, I can't watch this. They would be, you know, ahead by five. And it's like they just decided to go to the locker room while the other team was scoring. No.
There's a whole different spirit. And some of the new kids that have been brought up, and this is their first time in the majors, yep. but they're bonding together, and it's fun to watch.
Colson Montgomery is my guy, because I feel like things changed when Colson joined the team. So.
Well, Colson and what's his? Chase.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
They're a good duo.
Yeah, they are. Young and exciting, and they don't look like woolly bears. Some of those guys look like woolly bears out there. The other voice you heard is here in the studio. It's the keeper of the big plug. That would be Bob. Hey, Bob.
Good evening.
Oh, Bob, who made it through Lollapalooza traffic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Without...
You know, I've been here the past few weeks. I don't know about you guys, but I've been here.
I know. But you've got a way to get to work without the Lala traffic changing your world, right?
Julian and me.
Good, good. One more day.
Julian, are we correct that actually if you have watched the Batman Begins movie, you have a pretty good idea of the route that the two of you are taking, right?
Pretty much. I mean, for me, it's what Lollapalooza traffic.
Oh, wow.
Or the Blues Brothers, you know.
Yeah, Blues Brothers.
That's true.
Yeah. Did you guys see the droned video of the crowd at Lollapalooza? It is jaw-dropping, like 100,000 people.
Yeah.
And then Luke Combs was the first of the country performers to do Lollapalooza.
Good for him.
He had a great crowd.
I like him.
Yeah. I kind of wasn't excited about Luke until I saw him with Tracy Chapman.
That was a moment. Was it the Grammys?
And they did Fast Cars. And I was like, oh, okay. he sold me.
And it was funny, all the Tracy Chapman people who were saying, oh, he's taking her song, excuse me, she's making millions and millions of dollars on the publishing of that and the writing of that.
Yeah, I think the message was, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back. I've got a whole bunch of things to talk about tonight, so we hope that you will stick around. You can join us at 312-981-7200. The texts are coming in. In fact, we got a text, do you ever play the Life After Dark theme? Well, what you heard at the top of the show was the theme that we played for many, many years.
Unless, let's see, we've got the night shift theme. We've got a couple other things.
Okay, for 630, maybe later on we'll sample a few of those other ones that we have in the can and see which one trips your trigger, right?
If you haven't seen it, a wonderful two-part documentary on HBO called And So It Goes. It's all about Billy Joel. Watch it.
It's long. It kind of put me off because I thought, it's 3 hours for the first.
Actually, I think both segments are like 2.5 hours.
It felt like three.
Yeah. But it's really, really well done.
It was surprising. And I love Billy Joel. But it was.
To Studio A.
It was a nice surprise. Ron, I texted you after we watched the first part, and I said, have you watched it? And you said you're going to watch it on Friday, and you did, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, and it's always a good sign when someone is so excited about something that they have to tell somebody else, so I knew it was going to be good. You know,
that's interesting, because a bunch of people told us, or asked us, had we seen it, and I thought, oh, okay, I guess we better make the time to watch it.
And we learned so much. I never knew the huge part that his first wife played in his career.
And I kept thinking, thank goodness she's alive to appreciate the fact or to get the love for the role that she played in his career. Becoming his manager in the 70s, a woman with the likes of a Billy Joel, that was really impressive. I had no idea.
And we played Just the Way You Are. The record company didn't want to release that. And she said, okay, release whatever you want for the first song. The second one will be Just the Way You Are. Which
became his biggest.
Yeah.
Wow. So I fell into a Reddit message thread on the documentary. Are you ready for some of this?
Lay it on me.
It's such a puff piece.
Oh, good
There's
grief.
Not one objective, critical point of view. I'm sorry.
What documentary was that person watching?
Yeah, the first part had a whole bunch of warts and the dark side of Billy Joel, and he didn't seem like a real nice person. I mean, after all, he slept with his best friend's wife and ultimately ended up marrying her. We didn't have the internet back then, so we didn't know all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was. There were well-told stories. There were terrific interviews from people who were right there. And it was fascinating all the way through. And I count myself as someone who's not a huge Billy Joel fan. I mean, I think everybody's a Billy Joel fan. You have to like the music. Yeah. I mean, undeniable. Yeah. But I didn't buy all of his albums. I think I had The Stranger, and that was it. But I have never seen him in concert. But I know Billy Joel music. There's just hit after hit after hit for years and years and years. And I just thought it was a fantastic documentary.
I wonder, did you have the same, there was a realization that I had midway through it. I can't think of any singer, songwriter whose hits were a part of his life as much as they were Billy Joel.
Every song.
If you look at, okay, let's take Elton John, because he's been compared to Elton John. He doesn't like that comparison, and I don't think it's a fair one either. But if you look at Elton John, Bernie Taupin writes the lyrics, Elton writes the music.
Mm-hmm.
With Billy Joel, everything he's going through at any point of his life becomes fodder for the next song that he's going to write and record.
Yeah.
And people don't usually label him singer-songwriter, because that's usually guitarists for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But he just absolutely is. He's a terrific lyricist. He's a fantastic singer.
He's a wonderful pianist.
And he's a very good pianist.
Started at a very young age, too. So I'm looking here at this thread on Reddit. I love the first part. It included his old friend and bandmate that Billy actually stole his wife. Of course.
Well,
but that was the reality. They were young and crazy and living together. And it's definitely not a puff piece. So they're debating how they could have been more critical in the documentary. I'm like, it's his life.
And you get his point of view about a particular situation. Then you get the viewpoint from other people involved in the situation, and they don't always agree, and that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And they seem to, for the most part, they seem to have remained in his circle and friends on one level or another, regardless of the ups and downs that they had during during his career.
Now, Ron, you saw part two already, right?
Yes.
So you sat through. Did you watch both at the one time?
No, two separate nights.
Okay.
So, and I'm glad I did that. That's the right way to do it. Then you just don't get too tired of it.
Yeah.
We've seen part one, and we're holding part two only because we were kind of distracted and we really want to give it all of our attention, but we're going to watch it over the next couple of days.
Yeah, it does. And you won't be disappointed in part two. I mean, it includes that whole second act. I mean, Billy Joel was at the top for years and years, and it's very hard to be that creative for that long to sustain that kind of excellence, and he always did. So it has that that whole second part of his career when he was ready to walk away from it, and then he went, oh, guess I can't. I've got some financial problems now. So, and you know, they didn't just phone it in though.
Yeah.
He still kept writing, and he kept it at an excellent level. He's just it seems like a really good guy is what it comes across as. You know, even though, like you said, warts are there.
Yeah.
You know, he was. Nobody's perfect, you know, it falls under that category, but he's a good guy.
He seems like a really honest guy.
Yeah.
And we've got to thank Tom Hanks, because I have to believe that he was, because he's listed as a producer, he had to be one of the movers and shakers that said, we can make this happen with his Playtone music company.
And that first got its start with the movie That Thing You Do.
Yeah. Yeah. Ron, do you remember That Thing You Do?
Oh, it was an excellent movie, yeah.
It was such a good movie. Every time I see pictures of Steve from the 60s or the New Colony 6 or the Ides of March from the 60s, I think that was their documentary. That was basically their life, That Thing You Do. Julian, have you seen That Thing You Do?
I saw it the one time after you told me to watch it.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, good. Assignment was taken.
Yes.
Do you remember anything about it?
I remember Tom Hanks looking very young.
Yeah, this is true.
You don't remember Liv Tyler?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm going to have to rewatch it again.
Yeah.
Liv with the pouty lips, Tyler.
Yes.
And the
heart.
Night we had Tom Hanks on to talk about that movie, which was so exciting because he is a WGN geek, thanks to Roy Leonard, who used to interview him every time he went out to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, he was kind of nervous about being on the show with us, which I thought was funny. But we had Duane Eddy on that same night.
Wow.
And so we asked Tom Hanks if he wanted to talk to Duane because he'd used one of Duane's songs in Forrest Gump. And he was too nervous to do it. He said, I don't know.
And then when we got Duane on, we were asking Duane about Rebel Rouser being used in Forrest Gump. Duane said he was in the theater. He didn't know that it was going to be in Forrest Gump. He's in there with his grandson watching the movie.
Wow.
And when Forrest starts running,
and his grandson says,
Papa, that's you!
That's my granddad playing that.
I got goosebumps just repeating that story, because when he told the story, he said, it's like nothing I had ever experienced, because the movie had already established itself as being a blockbuster, and no one had told him that his song was Run, Forrest, Run. And here Tom Hanks was too nervous to talk to him, which I love about Tom Hanks, that he was nervous. Well, we've settled in. We got a lot to talk about. We will have our shout-outs. I know you all missed being acknowledged last week when we were not here.
And let me very quickly, before we get to the news, give you an idea of what's coming up. A little later, around 10 o'clock, we're going to talk with Ron Onesti. Ron Onesti is the man behind Onesti Entertainment, and he handles shows at the Displains, the Arcata, things like that. He was also a good friend of Connie Francis. And a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Connie Francis, we were all surprised to find out that she is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Well, yep. Ron is involved with an effort to get her into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So we'll right. talk with him mm-hmm. about that. Patrick Crisman, actually, our grandson Joseph and his posse, Patrick and Christine, will be in the studio with us a little mm-hmm. later. And Tom Appel from Consumer Guide will be in the studio with us a little later.
So we got a swinging door tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, looking at the almanac for the the weekend. Buckle up, guys. It's... I can't go here. Okay, I'm a professional, and it says right here, mm-hmm. in history, tomorrow, mm-hmm. it is National Grab Some Nuts Day. And so little did I know that I was recognizing National Grab Some Nuts Day when I made payday bars to bring into work mm-hmm. tonight.
And they're wonderful payday bars.
That was my inspiration, and I didn't even know it. So, Julian, thumbs up, thumbs down on the payday bars.
Well, payday was yesterday, but I will accept. Seal of approval.
You did like them?
Oh, they were delicious.
And you like a payday, so you confirm that they're very much like a payday, right?
It's ironic that both my favorite candy bars involve money.
Your other one is the?
100 grand.
100 grand.
Okay.
We said, our favorite now is the score bar, to which you went, huh?
Huh?
Yes.
Yeah, you got to try it. S-K-O-R.
Yes.
It's, for anybody who knows a Heath bar, it's like a Heath bar, only thinner.
Tastier.
And a little crispier.
Yes, better chocolate, too.
I mean, they're both good. But.
Start of the show, and we're already talking food.
But your dad used to hide Heath bars.
He did. He was like a 12-year-old boy.
He was.
I'm like, Dad, you don't eat a Heath bar for breakfast. I didn't eat a Heath bar. I said, I smell it on your breath.
Yeah.
Why are you lying to me? Well, it tastes really good with a cup of coffee.
He would go into Walgreens, and he'd wander down an aisle that we weren't in, and he would grab a bunch of...
Run to the checkout and pay for them. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I see the keeper of the big plug, Bob. Bob, come on in for a quick second, because I want to acknowledge Bob, who had a point of clarification about my statement about the White Sox.
Yes.
And the point of clarification was...
They've tied last year's wins.
That works
for me. Tonight, they'll break it.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And that's the attitude to have. Tonight, they will break it. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bob. Mm-hmm. He's like, what do you call it, a check ride? You're with us to keep us you in line,
yes,
right?
Yes, of course. Well, Bob is the one that takes copious notes. I just take notes. Bob takes copious notes.
Well, Bob, remember, tomorrow's... No, never mind.
Yeah.
Never mind. Okay. It's time for our shout-outs. By the way, I did post some pictures of our trip into work tonight.
Because we took a little different route, so you'll see some different pictures.
Thanks to construction, we found a secret route around that dreaded... Hollywood construction that's been going on forever. We did pass a liquor store, and I thought it was a cute name for the liquor store. Hollywood and Wine.
I like that.
That was cute. Very cute. And I think that was on Western Avenue.
Yeah, it was
right?
on Western.
We were traveling south on Western. Listening tonight, Sherry Hanrahan is in Romeoville with her fur babies, Lucy and Desi. Sherry and Bob are in Arlington Heights, and JP is in Peoria. Dean's listening in Indy. Jim G's in Wisconsin. Bing Besh. Remember a couple weeks ago I met Bing Besh?
Bing Besh.
Yeah. Bing Besh is in Winfield, and Stacey Drager is in Algonquin. Eddie Cruz is in Joliet. Sherry's in Bolingbrook. Debbie Tusick is in Sammich, Illinois. Brian Lefevre is in Bridgeview. Janet Gellert's in Fort Myers, Florida. Greg Borgman and Sally Franz and Carrie Johnson. And can't read my own handwriting. That's not good. George is in Augusta, Georgia. Thanks, George, for listening in, because he's a regular from Augusta, Georgia. Peter Lawrence is listening from Sauk Village, which is the southeast corner of Cook County, if you mm-hmm. needed to know that. Larry Katowski and Roy Phillips are listening in tonight. Cheryl Basso is listening from Plainfield on her mini Sony Walkman. A Walkman.
We still have some.
We still have Walkmans, and I still have the long sleeve t-shirt that I was sent from the Sony company, and down the arm it says Walkman. And I remember when we received them at the radio station out in Aurora, we didn't know what it was.
Did you get the AM/FM stereo ones?
No, the first
ones. That's what we got when we came to WGN.
Yeah, but the first ones back in 78, 79.
Yeah.
Because they sent out these t-shirts to get us FM disc jockeys ready for this thing called the Walkman. And we're like, what? What's a Walkman? Anyway, I digress. Forgive me. Jan Reinhart is in the laboratory, as always. Mary Ellen Vance is in Shelbyville, Tennessee, listening. Fred Husar and Gail Maslin is listening in Tinley Park. Kathy Coates in Sterling. Susan Powell is in Memphis.
Memphis.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Diane Vasquez, who is our graphics guru. She made us three adorable graphics tonight. Thank you, Diane. Carrie Johnson is in Palm Coast, Florida. Diane Kappas is in Metropolis. Metropolis, the last time we were there, we were on I-57, and we stopped to see the Superman statue.
Yeah.
Yes, that was 100 years ago. Lynn Kinzer's in San Antonio, Florida, listening with Alexa. She capitalized that Florida, because every time I get there, I kind of think, oh, but it is Florida. Larry Mann is listening in Miami, Florida. Rosemarie Gleason is in Annie Oakley Ranch in Grove, Oklahoma.
I would like to visit that.
Yes. Rosemarie, you have to check in, because I think she lives there, because she has posted the Annie Oakley Ranch in Grove, Oklahoma. We need to find out more about that.
And I think I don't think it has anything to do with the TV show. I think it actually is the birthplace of the real Annie Oakley.
Oh.
I think.
Oh, okay. Well,
what do I know?
Rosemarie, enlighten us, please. Richard Wade, one of the Chase twins, is listening from Troy, Missouri tonight. Sandy McComas is in Michigan City, Indiana. Carrie Hunt is in Ruskin, Florida. Ruskin is a new one on us. We have a bunch of Floridas.
Where is Ruskin?
I have no idea.
But Carrie, where is Ruskin?
We have so many Floridians that check in, and we appreciate that. John Couture is listening in Warren, Michigan. Todd Kawamoto is tuned in from Honolulu, Hawaii. That's a first.
We were watching during the week when there was the possible tsunami.
That was
scary.
Yeah, we went to the Hawaiian newscast, and we were watching just about the time where they were counting down to 7:16 p.m. their time, 6 hours earlier than us.
And one of the things we learned that is probably obvious to boaters, but we're not, so we didn't know, that the boaters, what they did, rather than moving their boats to higher land or something, they move their boats farther out
in the water
because if the tsunami happened, it wouldn't be as violent the farther out you are in the water.
I ain't going out there if there's a tsunami coming, just in case it gets big when I'm way out there.
Nope.
We heard from Diane Peterson, Peterson with a D. She has a niece in Hawaii who is, I'll have to look this up, I think she is like the champion female, some kind of fishing award that she has. Hmm. And she was talking about how they were going out in the water to ride out the storm. And that just blows me away.
For a lot of years, we used to talk to Bob Young's brother, Steve Young, who was on the Big Island. And he used to have, what was it called? HawaiianVillage.com?
Yes.
Was that his website?
Yes.
In fact, you might want to check it out. I don't know if it's still up, because sadly Steve passed away a few years ago, but he had wonderful pictures. He was a great photographer.
And we would have him on when the volcano would erupt. He would go to the volcano and one night he took a cup of coffee with him and he just tossed it into the lava so
and
we
you could
hear
it.
Yes. We're like, you need to get out of there. Don't stand on the edge of a volcano with hot lava. He said, I'm on a rock. Remember? He said, I'm up on a rock. I'm like, okay. Yeah, showbiz was his life. Mary Gold is listening in Tinley Park. Elizabeth Blackmore Holland is tuned in. Priscilla Gilbert Steak is in Joliet. Jean Jacobson is tuned in from Milwaukee. Peter Jukabowitz is in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Beverly Goodall is in Highwood, Illinois. Michelle Reitman is listening on her AM/FM clock radio in Skokie. Margot Moore is in Albuquerque. Michelle Fairfield is in Peoria. Tracy Douglas is in Savannah. Christine Failing is in Plainfield. Chuck Snitchler is tuned in from Hobart.
With his new glasses, I think.
And he said, I saw this pillow at my allergy doctor, and it's definitely some good advice. The pillow just reads, breathe.
Yeah.
We have to remember that sometimes. Yeah, breathe.
Especially these days.
Yes. Speaking of our good friends to this radio show and to us, Bobby Danos is out in Sandwich at the Manor.
Hey, Bobby.
Yeah, listening. And Dennis Jones and Linda Moeller is in the Oklahoma Panhandle. Terry Anderson is in Elkhart, Indiana. Michael O'Connor is tuned in. Helen Thomas is in Kenosha. Ryan Corcoran is in Waukesha. Judy B. is in Celebration, Florida, and sent us a crazy picture of the orangest sky I have ever seen.
Oh, that's gorgeous, Judy.
And palm trees against an orange sky. If you want to see it, go to our post on Facebook, and you can see some of the graphics and the posts and the cool stuff. Eric Baum is listening, as he often does, from Wells Beach, Maine. And he says, after 25 years with the same license plate, they came up with this. I'm not a fan of it. It's very simple. So he got an EB with... He shows his license plate is an EP with like a Christmas tree on it. He's not a fan of it. He says, also, it was a beautiful day in on the beach in Wells Beach, Maine. I got distracted looking at pictures. Forgive me. Eric Baum sends us a picture of the Harbor Gazebo as well, with 50 to 70s group performing this evening. It's a small town feeling. J.P. John Paul is listening. Robin Aiken, Rob Mecklen, and Bonnie Pearson. Tom Appel says he's listening, and we'll see him
soon.
Good.
Yeah.
Scott Cooper and Nancy Tomachewski and Roy Phillips, Eric Self, all tuned in. Eric's listening to us from Smiths Grove, Kentucky.
And let me give a shout-out to some of the people that have been nice enough to check out our blog, and we would appreciate it if you would, too. You will find our blog at steveandjohnnie.wordpress.com. And we would love it if you would subscribe to it. It's a free subscription, and we don't spam you. You only get an email anytime we do a new post. But some of the places that are checking out our blog, some of the countries, the United States, of course, we have the U.S., India, Sweden, Jamaica, Italy, Ireland, the United Kingdom, the Netherlands, Hong Kong, SAR, China, Guatemala, and Canada.
Wow.
Those are the countries that have been checking out our blog this week, and we appreciate it.
Every week I find myself saying, what is it that took them there? How did they end up there? Oh, Susan just checked in from Kenya, Africa, where she's getting ready to go on a safari.
Really?
Yeah. Susan, take a picture and send it to
please,
us.
Yeah, please, Susan.
Yeah. Tom from Tinley is listening in, and Ken and his pup Gus from Pullman, Michigan. Sorry for the late check-in, but I'm here. Jim is in Portland, Oregon. Bill D is in Munster. I try to sneak you all in, but if I missed you, I will get you next week, I promise.
Susan from Kenya, Africa, please take a picture.
Yeah.
How cool. Kenya, I wonder, what are you listening on? Are you using your computer? But if you're...
No, she's getting ready for safari.
Getting ready to go on safari.
Her
so
phone.
Are you listening on your phone and...
I guess.
WGN app or... Well...
We have questions.
And a few weeks ago, as we were remembering Connie Francis, we were surprised to find out that she's not... in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Stunned with her history. The first female singer to be in the top 10. I mean, she was a lot of first, and she had so many hit records.
Millions and millions and millions of songs.
So it was really shocking. He said, well, somebody's got to be doing something to get Connie in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
So we turned to our friend Ron Onesti, the founder of Onesti Entertainment. And we last, Ron, we last talked to you, I believe it was on the stage of the Arcata Theater.
With the Ides of March.
With one of the Ides of March Christmas shows.
Yeah.
How you doing, Ron?
Yes, it was. I'm doing good, guys. It's so nice to talk to you. And, yeah, it's really something about Connie. You know, you think about all the lives her music has touched, and I was fortunate enough to know her pretty well, and... it just blows all of our minds that she's not in the Hall of Fame.
Well, in fact, didn't you do a post where you call her Aunt Connie?
Well, you know what? It's a really, if I can get into the story a little bit, because several years ago I got to meet her. You know, I'm blessed to be in this part of the business with we call them heritage acts and legacy acts, and I've been obviously a big fan of her for many, many years. Her family, and I brought her in to do a show at the Arcata. Finally, got her to do it because I chased her for many years. So everybody I knew, Neil Sedaka, Paul Anka, you know, the people that we were working with regularly, mm-hmm. please, can we get Connie? And brought her in, and we got to be very, very good friends, and that's I would call her Aunt Connie.
Hmm. So what are the chances of getting some momentum to get her recognized by the Hall of Fame?
Well, we've started a petition process going, a campaign for it. You know, talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame briefly. Just last Sunday, I had an experience that was really, really something. As most of you have heard, Chubby Checker, our other good friend from that era, is a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee for 2025, which just announced April 27th. And they called him up. He was so excited to get the news. And then they told him, I think it's going to be November 8th or something, whenever the I think that's when they're going to broadcast it, but whenever they're going to record it, he said, you know what? I'm sorry. I can't make it. I have a gig. And they said, are you kidding me? Are you serious? He said, look, it's been 63 years. I've never gave up on a gig. I've never blown one off. I'm not about to start. I'm sorry. I can't make it.
Wow.
The producers are furious. But they called him back a few weeks later and said, fine, you know, how about if we do it at one of your shows and we'll send a crew out? And they said, okay. I'll be by Ron's place at the Displays Theater in a couple weeks. That's the only place that I would do it. And so it was last Sunday. They sent out a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame film crew out there, and he did his acceptance speech. They wanted a quiet room, and so I put him in my speakeasy on the second floor. It was beautiful, of course, wonderful background. But then I talked to the producer in L.A. I said, you know what, not for nothing. You know, this is your show, of course, but he is a guy of the people. He loves his fans. Mm-hmm. And to be able to share the acceptance speech with the people in the crowd, a full house, can you imagine the vibe? He said, no, can't do it. It's got to be structured. You know, calls it back an hour later. He said, you know what? I think you're onto something. Let's try it. Let me tell you something. It wound up, because remember, the producer was on Zoom. You know what I'm saying? He just said,
right.
So they flew out the statue, and it's just how the world turns and the planets lined up. I actually was the one to take the statue and introduce him on stage and introduce him and actually induct him into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my honor and privilege to introduce to you 2025 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee Chubby Checker. I hand him the statue, and the place went crazy. And then he did his acceptance speech, and then surprisingly, he just went right into the twist. The band was going, the place went nuts. It was epic.
That is amazing.
And we'll get to see that in November when they broadcast the whole Hall of Fame induction ceremony, right?
Yeah. I'm so excited about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to your other question about Connie, I mean, you can ask anybody out there, and everybody's got it's like, you know. Politics, abortion, whatever, and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees, it's right up there, you know?
Yes.
Because there are those. Every time I talk to somebody about it, because we're fortunate at the Arcata Theater that we've had more Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees on our stage than pretty much any other stage in the country.
I bet, yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that argument's always happening. Some the people that are in it shouldn't be in it. The people that aren't in it should be in it. It's a crazy conversation that happens constantly.
But when it comes to Connie, I think if you just look at the numbers, her sales, her appearances, the impact that she had on the early days of rock and roll,
and
there is no bleeping reason that she shouldn't be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
And let's bring it up to now. The love that she was getting from TikTok with people taking her song. And I was just so happy, Ron, that she was alive to feel the love and see the videos and just be tickled by, you know, TikTok going after a song that was actually a it was a flip side of it. Wasn't really a big
a song
hit
that she recorded in the 60s. And wasn't it I believe it was the number one song on TikTok?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It was. You know, and you said a great word, tickled. She was tickled. She didn't get it. Mm-hmm. She couldn't even say TikTok. She said, what's that? It's on some clock thing or something.
Oh, no, my gosh.
It's ticking. It's kind of... But yeah, she was actually tickled, and she said it was just like it was back in the days when she, you know, when she was 16, 17, 18, and that music was so prevalent. You know, you talk about the founders of rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
You come up with names, and you come up with, you know, Elvis, or is it Beatles, or is it Chuck Berry, or is it Little Richard? You know, all these people come up, and all these are all the guys, all the males.
Mm-hmm.
You come up with the females. Of course, there's many females that participated and then contributed to rock and roll, but there's nobody that you have, like, especially in my Italian-American community. You know, you bring that up, there's always Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin,
yep,
right.
Tony Bennett, but the females, there's only one,
mm-hmm.
Patty Francis.
And Ron, isn't there an Italian-American organization in the Chicago area that is running the Let Her In campaign?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things going on in Chicago and actually around the country. There's a thing called the Conference of Presidents of Major Italian American Organizations that's doing that. I mean, there's several ways that we're trying to get in. Actually, I'm also trying to get her in by friends. You know, it's ironic. I happen to be talking, not to be name dropping, of course, but I'm kind of in the business. So I was talking to Dion DiMucci about just about three weeks before. She passed, and we're on the phone just talking about actually his new, book out and some other projects, the blues album that he's got out. And he was inducted in 1989, and we were talking about, you know, people that should be getting in there. And we're talking about Connie. He says, you know what, I'm going to start making some phone calls because this has got to happen. So, you know, we're getting some other national friends behind it as well.
But for people who are listening to us, what can the average, because we have people listening literally all around the world right now, what can our listeners do? Who can they write to? Who can they email to say, we feel she should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Well, you know, they could definitely obviously send it directly to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They mm-hmm. do that stuff. But we are, our website goes up next week. You can go, there's an Italian organization here. It's called the Joint Civic Committee of Italian Americans, and it's the JCCIA.com. And there'll be links there on petitions you can sign to be a part of it because so we're definitely looking for people. Again, we're working on a national network of organizations all over the country that is getting behind this. Also the National Italian American Foundation in Washington. I mean, we really believe in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the website is jccia.com.
.com.
That's correct.
Okay. I also see there's a change.org petition that started circulating right after her passing, and they've lumped Connie Francis with Paul Anka and Neil Sedaka. When I read that they're not in the Rock, that I found that stunning too.
Yeah.
But they're trying to get the three of them recognized on the 2026 ballot, and I think we would all agree that should be done.
Sure.
They just got to make it right.
100%. Yeah. Again, fortunate enough, they've all played the Arcata. Paul Anka comes and plays the Arcata and displays every year. Last year we had him, it was really something because he honored us by being our Grand Marshal in the Columbus Day Parade.
Mm-hmm.
I remember.
Not only did he do that, he sang a song right on State and Wacker before the parade started. He sang My Way, and he rewrote the words. If you Google it, and it's on YouTube, he rewrote the words to My Way, and it included Columbus Day and the sock stinking, and it was very cool.
That's great.
By the way,
I got another little something about Connie really quickly.
Sure.
You know, we put on the Taylor Street Italian Festival, which is going to be August 14th to 17th, coming up in a couple of weeks. And a few years ago, we wanted to give her an award and honor her. And I asked her to come perform, at the Taylor Street Italian Festival. And she said, absolutely not. I couldn't do it. I need my orchestra. It's outside. I couldn't do it. But I'll come if you want to give me the award. And I said, absolutely. So what we did is we put together a show. We honored her by serenading her with her songs, Where nice. The Boys Are, Mama. I had Dean Martin's daughter, Dina. We had the cast from Jersey Boys at the time do a song. Louis Prima's daughter, Lena Prima. It was just wonderful. Then she went up on stage, and she was actually bawling because the place was shocked. Solid people, all the way down Cable Street. And she said, you know what, I'm going to do a little something I don't normally do. She pulled out a CD, her background tracks, and she sang Mama and Where the Boys Are. People were just going crazy. It was wonderful.
That's a great story.
Neat. You know, before we get too far away from things, I want to touch on, you've got a huge celebration that's going on at the Des Plaines Theater, the Centennial Celebration. Tell us about that.
Thank you, yes. You know, about 5 years ago, we kind of rescued the Des Plaines Theater from the wrecking ball.
Yep.
It was definitely condemned. And we decided, along partner with the city, Rivers Casino, where we all put what we needed to together. And I believe we made it a really beautiful palace. The second floor has bourbon and brass speakeasy with live blues and jazz. And we will, on August the 9th, celebrate 100th anniversary of the theater. We've got a parade at 5 p.m. Grand Marshals will be the Ides of March, your buddies.
Yep.
Also, Danny Serafin of Chicago.
Yep.
Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees.
Oh.
And our grand mistress of ceremonies and Marshallette, Priscilla Presley. So that's going to be at 5 o'clock. And then at 7 o'clock, or 7:30 rather, we're going to have a show. It's called Des Plaines Theater Through the Decades. It starts with a 1920s Prohibition band, and it goes to the 1940s with the World War II. We got the Andrews Sisters come out. And then 50s, we talked to Priscilla about Elvis and rock and roll in the 50s. And then Mickey will come out and talk about music with the Monkees in the 60s. And then, of course, the Ides will do their thing with Vehicle and talk about the early 70s. And then Jimmy Peterick and the guys will do, of course, the Survivor stuff, Eye of the Tiger for the 80s. And then Danny Serafin and his band will do the timeless songs from Chicago also. And then there'll be a bunch of other surprises. It's going to be a very, very cool trip through the decade.
And tickets are still available?
Yes. They're only $39, and they're at oshows.com. It's the letter O, shows.com. And again, that's next Saturday night, August 9th.
And I've heard from listeners who have visited that theater. We're very familiar with the Arcata, and we love it. And they tell us that, really, there's not a bad seat in the house at either one of the theaters. And I will confirm that I just love the acoustics in the Arcata. And I'm told that the Des Plaines Theater is just equally as good and just a lovely experience.
In fact, Ron, if I can just for a second, we want to focus on you.
Yes.
You are so involved and have been so involved in rehabbing wonderful theaters around the Chicago area. You obviously have a passion for that, a passion for the music. How did this all happen? Because you have had such a wonderful impact on music, on some of the wonderful historic places, the legends musically, the legends in terms of some of the theaters. How did you, what made you want to do this? Where did you get your passion?
Well, you know what? I mean, you know, passion comes from within. And I like to say is I was just born at the right time. You know, I mean, you think about us that were born. I was born in 1962. So, you know, I grew up with, and I had older cousins. So, you know, that was that the Tom Jones and all that stuff was around me at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know, I just the right time, right place, the right music. I mean, I'm you know, I've got peers in the business that are too cool to say that they're starstruck or, you know, these celebrities don't mean nothing to me. I am such a fanboy with all this stuff. I really am. I you know, I still marvel at these guys, at these ladies and guys and these icons, you know, whether it's you know, Bret Michaels of Poison or Engelbert Humperdinck or anybody in between. You know, I started in high school putting on the proms and the homecomings and you know, doing all that stuff, and it was always been with me. But you know what, it's just I have a passion for that type of music, you know, the 70s classic rock, the 80s a little
Thank
bit
you.
60s of course. Yep. Well, and I'm lucky. I mean, today I was just on, obviously on stage. We had a show, and actually we had a national touring salute to Fleetwood Mac at the Arcata, and I'm looking in the audience, and there's obviously some more mature individuals in the audience. But I even made mention from the stage, look at all the 12 and 15-year-olds that were in the audience.
Yeah.
And that speaks volumes, because it talks about the power of that music. Mm-hmm. I mean, now you've got tributes to Fleetwood Mac or just everybody, or Pink Floyd. I mean, in 30 years, I don't know, will we have tributes to Ariana Grande or Justin Bieber? I don't know if it will last.
Well, you have done a remarkable job of bringing life to the music scene. I really, and we all credit you for doing it, because you're hands-on, and I just don't know how you can squeeze as much as you squeeze into your life, but we appreciate that, and we appreciate you, and I'm so happy we could get you for a few minutes tonight to talk on the radio with us, and I hope you will do it again to keep us up to date on what's happening at the Desplaines and the Arcata Theater. Thank you, Ron. Thank you so much.
No, you guys are so wonderful, so kind, and I love listening to you guys on my way home on a Saturday. I love the music, but I also, know my limitations. So usually when you guys are on, I am skedaddling home after putting the show on stage. So,
good. That's good to hear.
I show a lot, too.
All right. Thank you. Take care of yourself, and
thanks,
we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. Thanks again.
As we welcome our grandson Joseph and his posse, Patrick and Christine, into the studio, one of them attended Beauty and the Beast today.
Yay.
Yes.
And who was that, Christine?
I don't know.
Yes, Dr. Christine Crispin said, I want to see Beauty and the Beast. And if you boys don't want to go, I'm going.
And I got better seats without them.
You were like on the 12th row?
Yeah, I was on the floor, main orchestra level, row L. And so if you count A through L, it's like the 12th row back.
You texted, it was really sweet to see the little girls dressed as Belle.
They were all dressed up as Belle, running around. And after they played this song, Be Our Guest, a whole bunch of streamers came down in the theater. So you see these little girls jumping out of the aisle
to
pick up the streamers and stuff. It was
It's kind of like their version of Rocky Horror Picture Show. You know, it's interactive.
I was happy with that.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather do that than Rocky Horror.
It was a good production.
It really was.
Good.
It really was.
Good. I'm so glad you got to see it.
Yeah.
So you had the boys take you there, and you said, I'm going to be sitting right there on the floor. And
they dropped me off, and they did their thing, and I enjoyed my show.
That's great.
And we have been getting texts all evening for people saying that they couldn't wait for Joseph and his posse to show up. So
Joseph, sign
in. Joseph, say hi to the kids.
Hi.
So you have had a busy week since you've been here, haven't you? Last Sunday, you spent the day at the Museum of the Art Institute was last Sunday, right?
Yeah.
And you liked that. Were you surprised that you liked it? I think you were.
I forgot what was there.
We saw all the paintings.
All the paintings and statues.
Yes.
Remember the weird box that we saw that you stood in front of that was clear?
Yeah, he got a little confused by the modern art wing, but
yeah, like, really? This is art? I could do this with my crayons, right? We had a fun time yesterday. We went to Brookfield Zoo. Joseph and Christine and I went to Brookfield Zoo. Couple of surprises. I hadn't been there for decades. I was shocked at the cost to get into Brookfield Zoo. Now, you guys have gone to LA Zoo, San Diego Zoo. Was it comparable to what
I think it's probably more in line with San Diego Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
LA Zoo is actually very economical for a family.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was telling you, at the LA Zoo, you could get a pass for a year for less than $150 for a family of three or four.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to round it off. It was $30 for adults. It was $20 for children and $25 for seniors. And $17 to park, which seemed random, like $17 to park.
Yeah.
I wonder how much that price has changed, because the last time we were there was, 1984?
Probably,
The year we got married. And there was a special Boo at the Zoo in October, and you
I was booing.
You were booing and you were a cat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and that was the day that we had the Sunday brunch along with Bozo.
Bozo the Clown. Yeah, the real Bozo the Clown. But we didn't pay to get in then, so it didn't register. And again, that was 40-plus years ago. Yeah. But I'm glad you'd been to other zoos. I checked out the Milwaukee Zoo. Theirs is a little bit cheaper, maybe $5, $6 cheaper. And it's a beautiful facility. Oh, I mean, yeah. Brookfield Zoo, you need a whole day. We made the mistake of going in the afternoon. Yeah. And they close at 6, and we could have just walked our legs off.
I think you need to pre-plan.
Yes.
Go early and pre-plan. At least if you've never been. If you've been there before, then you
know what you like.
You can do your thing. But if we go back, like if we come back in the winter, I would want to look at a map.
And I want to go in the winter. I think it would be fun to go in the wintertime, get some hot chocolate and walk around. Mm-hmm. Because I think you heard what I heard. People were saying some of the animals aren't out because they're too hot.
Well, we saw that. I mean, every exhibit we tried to go to, we had no animals.
Joseph, didn't we see the back of an ostrich? We saw the back of a rhinoceros, right?
And a kangaroo.
And the kangaroos were like the most... That we saw of the
baby
animals.
Kangaroo.
We saw sleeping camels and a sleeping lion, and we're like, okay, where's everybody else?
Oh, and we saw the turtle or the tortoise, whatever it was.
What, like over 100 years old, or
probably,
something like that.
Yeah,
he was creaking along like he was about 100.
That's how I felt.
But I have to say, one of the coolest things that Joseph took us on was earlier this week when Joseph has discovered this great place to see the plains at O'Hare.
Oh,
and you
yes.
don't have to pay anything.
Joseph,
you want to share that with the kids? That was fun.
Yep, really was fun.
I didn't find this out. He did.
He found it.
did
you just Google where to watch planes at O'Hare?
Yeah, I was basically saying, is there a good place to watch airplanes at O'Hare? And I found a Reddit thread, and somebody recommended this one random location, which is over on North Access Road.
Don't
over
tell
by
anybody.
Sorry.
Never mind.
It's over by Delta Cargo and Nippon Cargo Airlines. So you're kind of in the parking lot for the employees of the cargo, but you're literally next to runway 10C, and we were seeing planes take off and land. You're right across from Terminal 2, so you get to see everything. And it was just so much fun.
And what is the app, because some people are curious about this, what is the app you have on your phone where you can tune and you can hear the tower talking to the pilots
live
as they're coming into
O'Hare?
That's right, Live ATC. Now, it's not a free app. Mm-hmm. I think it was, I forget how much I paid for it, but Live ATC, if you don't have a Sea Crane radio, which, by the way, fantastic radios, and we have one, but Live ATC allows you to basically, you go in and say, okay, I want to go and see O'Hare, and you need to know what runway you're next to.
Oh, okay.
And then you can say, okay, I want to hear tower, I want to hear approach, I want to hear departure, I want to hear ground.
Hmm.
So we were listening to 10C tower, and you know, when we go to LAX, we'll listen.
Tell them what you heard, buddy.
What'd you hear? Oh, that's right.
The bird strike.
That wasn't at O'Hare, but we were at we were at LA Hex, and apparently there
LA
was
Hex.
A LAX, and apparently there was a bird strike,
and you heard it.
They were
the
talking
tower.
About
the
on the
pilots
air.
Were telling the air traffic control.
Oh.
The most
then,
disturbing part.
And then go ahead.
The most disturbing part is that they found the goose.
They found
the bird on their own way.
Yes.
Oops.
But I found
we got to hear that on the radio.
It's now a full class meal.
With fries on the side.
Yeah. Fries and ranch.
Fries with ranch. That's right. But all I could say when you told that story was, oh, thank goodness you're on the ground. I don't want to be on the plane when that happens.
Ew. We have Patrick and his posse of Christine and... Actually, Joseph and his posse of Christine and Patrick in the studio with us.
Yes. So what's on the agenda? You guys are here for a few more days. What's coming up? Because I'm vicariously traveling through Chicago with you. Yesterday, as an aside, Christine was doing the driving. Thank you very much for doing that. And Waze and Google Maps insisted that we go to Brookfield from the north side of Chicago via city streets, not the expressway. So we figured, well, if they're both telling us that, then the expressway and the tollway must be just dreadful. So we drove through places in all the years that I've lived here I've never been to, right?
We found the place we wanted to go to.
That we want to live in.
Yeah.
And we said it was like this town was like Harry Potterville.
Yeah.
It was so cute. It's just outside of Brookfield.
Yep.
I'm not sure if it was Lyons or where it was. Maybe somebody listening goes, that's my town. Don't send people there.
It has that train. Joseph noticed the train station.
Yes.
The depot or whatever it's called.
Right. Where the platform was there.
Where the platform. And yeah. He was like, that's the Harry Potter train.
And then we realized that the architecture was very quaint. Very, very nice. Anyway, I'd never been there in all the years. Probably because it's on the south side. Steve, I'm sorry.
That's one of the many things that we enjoy about having Joseph and his posse in town, because there are things that we see through the eyes of a tourist, things that we just kind of take for granted. And
or never get around to, like having gone to Brookfield Zoo for 40 years. You know?
Or in all the times that we've been out to O'Hare, we didn't know about this back road winding in, and you're literally as close as you can be to the airplanes. There is a fence that separates you.
But we don't want anybody else to go there, so stop.
Yeah, it's a secret place.
It's our secret.
You don't know about that.
Yes.
We're going to the shed tomorrow.
Yes, you've tried to do that for couple visits.
Yeah, and I could never get a timed entry, so I finally got in.
So that was one of the first things you did when you got here.
I've been trying to get in, yes.
Yeah.
And so we're going to shed tomorrow.
So you can't just walk up to the shed and...
Apparently not.
You got to have
tickets.
A reservation.
I mean, last year when we tried to go... Like that, walk in.
By the way,
in.
That blowing noise you're hearing, that's Joseph is cleaning his glasses because he wants to see what he's saying on the radio a little clearer.
The last time we tried to do the shed, there's signs all over.
Really?
It's full. So then we had to go to the planetarium or to the field.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we have never gotten to go because we just could never get in.
Yeah. So you stopped by Navy Pier today after they picked you up.
No, they did.
Oh, they did.
They did
while you were at the play.
So we dropped her off at the Cadillac Theater and then decided that because we are both boys and like candy, we drove out to the Ferrara Candy Company.
Did you?
And went to their factory store.
No!
And
did you get hot tamales and lemon heads?
They don't make hot tamales there. Remember,
no.
That's a different company.
But I didn't know that. It used to be, I think.
They make Red Hots. They do Brock's, Sweethearts, Now and Later Nerds. And we've got you some nerd clusters sitting at home. But we may have spent a little too much money at that store, much to Christine's
chagrin. I got the credit card.
You saw it on your phone when they charged? Like, they went to the ultimate candy store.
The ultimate candy store.
I didn't even know you could go to the Ferraris.
Yeah, they have basically, and it's hard to see, but it's sort of like the Ferrara Pan sign there at the front door. And then sort of to the left of it, there's a small little store that you can walk into, and they have all the candy that they sell. And because it's, you know, the factory store, it's the freshest versions of it.
So it's not seconds.
So it's not seconds. This is actual, the real stuff. So if you're looking for, you know, bottle caps or pixie sticks or atomic fireballs or...
What?
Lemonhead especially.
He got the Sweetheart gummies.
Yeah, the Sweetheart gummies, and he ripped into that bag.
I love Lemonheads. We bonded for years for our love of certain candies, and I know they're children candy, but in a world of candies, I want my Lemonheads, I want my hot tamales, I want my Nerds, clusters, and, I got to go there. You had fun without me. So,
and then we did miniature golf.
Oh, I forgot. We went to that cool new place in
Old Orchard. Yeah.
Putt Shack. Beautiful place. Mm-hmm.
Joseph, did you like it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I won the first game, I'd like to point out.
I won the second game.
Yes. And Joseph let us win because he was...
So it's an indoor putt-putt and really high quality is what I
hear.
Beautiful.
It was so nice.
Yeah. I mean, a great place to take your family or take a company.
Well, we were lucky because we were there right around lunchtime. And honestly, if there were 20 people there, I'd be surprised. So we had someone to walk us through it because it's kind of overwhelming when you walk in. You see these computers on the wall and you see these different games that you can and so we I think this girl named Krista took us under her wing
on the tour and it's cool because you get your own assigned ball and it keeps track of your score the whole game and it's very encouraging / discouraging at the same time.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And that's just part of the whole renovation that is going on at Old Orchard. There is a huge there is, what is it? It's going to be an apartment complex, and they're
Senior residence?
I think senior residence, but then some other kind of shopping and things. They're really kind of, if anybody who drives the Edens knows what we're talking about. The exit to Old Orchard, you will see so much construction going on there because they're branching out into the western area of Old Orchard and where Bloomingdale's used to be. That's going to be, I believe, becoming part of the apartment complex and some of the new things that they're putting in there.
But this place is top shelf, Putt Shack. So I got to give them a shout out. I guess there's one out in Oak Brook, too. We actually played a second game and it was half price. So if you get there and you love it. But we also observed that they have pods.
They call it pods.
Yeah. So for $75, you can have as many as 10 people?
I can't remember. It's either 10 or 6 12. Or 10, 12. There's a number of, we counted it that our group could do it.
Yeah. And for $75, I know that sounds like an awful lot, but you can, for an hour and a half, you can play.
If you got a bunch of people with you.
Yeah. And you're playing as many as like 9 games.
Yeah. And if you realize it took us about 30 minutes to go through each of the 9 holes for about $40.
Yeah.
So $75 equates to about an hour worth of the golf. Plus, you get an extra 30 minutes.
Yeah, and you're doing
and everybody gets to play.
You're doing it with a bunch of people, too, which is really fun. So that was different. Back to Old Orchard and how it's changing, can I just go on record to say that would be like my dream to live in a place where I could walk out and there would be the mall at my feet?
Can I move in with you?
Yes. I'm out there going, wow, just to be able to walk out the door
I need to exercise.
I need to get my steps in. I'm going to go over to Nordstrom's and walk around.
Sometime we should actually talk to one of the people behind the development because Old Orchard is one of the
oldest,
but also one of the few malls, outdoor malls, that has said, no, we're not going to enclose everything. We're going to develop new things and move with the times, but we're not giving up this wonderful outdoor mall that we've had for years.
Is there still an outdoor mall in L.A.? Because we were there and
several of them. Yeah. A lot of mixed use ones. Yeah. So there's the Americana brand, which is sort of high end shopping and then apartments and things upstairs.
Okay.
There's the Grove and
Victoria Garden.
Victoria Gardens is a good one. And down into Orange County, you go to Fashion Island, which is Christine's happy place.
But in the Chicago area, and one of the reasons I'm giving a shout out to Old Orchard is because what used to be one of my favorite malls when I lived in Calumet City, River Oaks, is now desolate. I mean, and you used to have Marshall Fields and Penny's and Sears and all kinds of things. That's where they used to have live outdoor entertainment. And now there's maybe one or two places. It's really sad.
It's depressing.
Okay, now we're going to talk computer stuff with Patrick Christman, who's, for those of you who may be new to the class, Patrick is the Director of Educational Technology at Keck School of Medicine of USC.
And he's normally with us in the midnight hour from...
He's never normal when he's with us.
Yeah, okay. So he's with us in the midnight hour a couple times a month from the West Coast. But since he's in town, we said, you know what? Just stop on by here and we'll sneak in a little bit earlier. And I want to start with one of the things we were talking last hour about TikTok and the popularity of TikTok and how it was really a great moment for singer Connie Francis to get all kinds of love on TikTok. She didn't know what TikTok was. And I kind of thought TikTok was the social media platform among the youth of America. But it's not, right, Patrick?
It's very popular, but to be completely honest, the 800-pound gorilla in social media, and you don't think it's social media, but it is YouTube.
YouTube.
YouTube is profoundly, just completely, overwhelmingly popular with teens. Pew Internet actually did a study. 9 in 10 teens, those are kids between 13 and 17, you don't count 18 and 19-year-olds as teenagers, use YouTube, making it by far the most popular social media platform of among teens. By the way, it's not just teens and kids. More adults are using YouTube than anything else.
Is that because of YouTube TV that they become aware of YouTube?
No, I think it's really most people just go and they open up YouTube and start watching videos and then interacting with other people in the comments and then watching the next video and watching YouTube shorts. And it's just...
And even though there are other video sites... YouTube still, as you say, is the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah, 7 in 10 teens are visiting YouTube every day. 15% are saying they use it every single day.
Wow.
And Joseph will soon be one of those kids.
And they have to be making some money because they're one of the many rumors that we've heard over the past couple weeks about Stephen Colbert is that there's a possibility that YouTube may be bidding for Stephen Colbert after his contract is up with CBS to say, come on over here and hang out with us.
I think it's really the future of where broadcast is going to be is that everybody's already on YouTube. I mean, if you think about, you know, creators like Mr. Beast or Mark Rober and how many tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people who watch it, and Colbert might get 2 million. You know, 3 million who watch him. So this really is
good
the new frontier.
For over-the-air TV.
Fantastic for over-the-air TV. Yeah. But the reality is that most people are now watching things on YouTube. So if you're using it right now, understand YouTube is very, very popular.
And isn't this kind of an extension of something that we talked about years ago when we were talking about different screens and tablets and phones and things? And basically, it's all coming down to, okay, what is on this screen that you're looking at? And just there are so many different ways for stuff to get on your screen that it doesn't matter.
And Scott Galloway actually made the point that the smaller the screen, the more money is being made in it. People
really?
Have gone from the big screens, and you know, movie theaters are starting to, you know, they're okay, but they haven't recovered from the pandemic. Most people went to TV, and the reality is that streaming is one way to make some money. But most people today, if you look at their media consumption, social media particularly.
Phones?
It's phones and tablets. And it's looking at a screen in your hand is where people are watching the most content.
I bet you in the past month, I've gone to YouTube a half dozen times to find out how to do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a toilet that was running. So I thought, well, I'll just go to YouTube and find out what the people who know how to fix this tell me how to fix it.
Well, and I actually pay for YouTube TV, which is different from YouTube. That's not what we're talking about. But I realized in the last month, we don't watch television anymore. It's all streaming and very likely YouTube, maybe Netflix, maybe HBO, maybe Discovery. But for the most of the time, it's sitting on a screen looking,
which
not on the TV.
Makes me sad because I love the days when there were events, finales of TV shows, even before we had VCRs, and everybody watched MASH at the same time, and everybody got to the water cooler the next day, and everybody talked about it.
But that's actually starting to happen now on YouTube. A good example of that is what Ryan Trahan did the past 50 days, where he did 50 Airbnbs in 50 days in 50 states. And he was doing that to raise money for St. Jude. Mm-hmm. He set a goal to basically go to 50 states, 50 Airbnbs, and raise $1 million. And he had really, it became much watched TV, but it's not TV, it's on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And families were watching this together every night on YouTube. We did. And watching him when he broke $1 million and then $2 million and $5 million.
Did
and
he seven, really?
$11 million that he raised for St. Jude. All the major manufacturers and brands or everything were saying, we're going to give you money. T-Mobile became a huge sponsor. Kia became a huge sponsor.
Man.
And it's, you know, this was became the, you know, the episodic television that you would normally see, you watched every day on YouTube. If you if you're interested in it, it's fantastic. Go Ryan Trahan. Just start on
T-R-A-Y-O-T-R-A-H-A-N. Okay.
And just start in day one and just go through. And it's fantastic. And he, well, I mean, when he was in Chicago, he stayed at a factory somewhere that had been turned into an Airbnb. Some of the places are a little strange.
Kind of wacky.
Some of them, but it's just a compelling story. And it was just fun. But it, again, it's the reasons why you would turn into TV or tune into TV are becoming less and less other than sports.
Yeah.
Sports still is what unites us. And actually, if you go look at the 100 most popular things that happened and on television, 99
Super Bowls,
98 of them are sporting events.
Yeah,
I wonder how much of that has to do with, A, you're a sports fan of whatever the sport is. B, the sport is live.
Yep.
So you're seeing this now as opposed to a show that was filmed or videotaped or whatever several weeks ago, and now they're finally broadcasting it.
Yeah.
We were in the midst of must-watch screen and talking about YouTube and YouTube age verification?
Yeah, across the United States, there are about a dozen states that have passed or at least proposed laws to regulate how minors use social media. And many of these require the social media platforms to verify that somebody is actually the age that they say they are. Don't forget that the United Kingdom also passed this new version of the Online Safety Act, which involves age checks. So in response, you might have heard about this. If you didn't, listen up. Starting August 13th, YouTube is going to slowly start testing a machine learning model that estimates your age. Even if you lied in your profile account when you set it up,
what?
It's going to try to guess, based on what you're watching on YouTube, how old you are. And if YouTube determines that you are under 18, it's actually going to start filtering what you can see until you go and give YouTube some extra information to prove that you are not a kid. Because, again, YouTube needs to protect itself. It needs to, in light of the laws, make sure that children aren't seeing it. So if YouTube kind of just their AI says, you know what, I think Johnny is actually a 13-year-old girl, some of the things it's going to do when you sit there and say, wow, this is terrible, actually, it's no personalized ads. So it's like, okay, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to give you some take a break notification saying, you know, you've been watching YouTube a little too much.
Oh,
you
interesting.
You want to put down the screen a little bit. It's going to
nag me.
It's going to nag you. It's going to limit you from watching repetitively content over and over again, which young kids tend to do, or content that might be inappropriate for people who are young. Things like talking about your body image or social aggression or things like that. They're going to give you some screen time settings, some bedtime reminders. These are all, I think, kind of really positive things. Or if you post something, you do go in and make a comment in a YouTube video. It's going to sit there and say, you know, we notice that you're young. Remember, this is a public record. When you post things online, other people can see it, and it could follow you around.
So forever.
Are you sure you want to do this? So I'm not sure this is a terrible thing, but most of these features exist. YouTube's just going to be forcing it to people who their AI thinks are under 13. If the AI gets it wrong, what do you do? Well, you need to verify your age using either a credit card. So you give YouTube a credit card and it says, okay, I can verify that you are who you are. Or taking a scan of your government ID, which causes
that
some
makes me
concern.
Feel a little uncomfortable.
I don't know if I want YouTube seeing my driver's license.
Yeah, that's the red flag for me. What assurance do we have that giving this information
isn't going to get out, which is a story, by the way, we'll be talking about it a little bit later, where that information did get out for another company. It's sort of the trust me, bro, it's YouTube and Google.
Yeah, right.
I think it's...
So at its core, it's all good.
Yeah.
But now we're immediately realizing, oh, man, I'm not real keen on the credit card or my driver's license or my government ID. Would everybody have to do that?
Well, it's basically going to be watching what you view, and it kind of says, okay, well, I know
so
the
if
video,
it challenges you,
I know the
or
videos
you challenge
that kids watch a yeah. lot. So you seem to watch these things a lot. I think you're a kid. Christine doesn't know this yet, but Joseph has apparently logged into Christine's account, so she will be soon getting the age verification on YouTube because of all the kids' videos that Joseph has been watching on her account. YouTube here is just kind of walking a tightrope. They've got the law that says you need to make sure that kids under the age of 13 yeah. can't see the content.
And they have the technology
they
with AI.
They have the technology with AI.
Because they don't have a staff that's sitting there going, oh, nope. Well, Johnny just watched 15 Bluey videos. She must be 12.
And on one hand, you can't blame YouTube for trying to follow the law. But on the other hand, okay, if you're going to follow the law, give me some security that you're not going to be...
Yeah, I want to know how these face or behavior patterns are being stored by YouTube, and how can I challenge it, and do I definitely have to give them my photo? And I don't.
So this all starts on August 13th.
August 13th is they're going to start rolling it out. Not for everybody, so don't be surprised if it doesn't come to you, but it's one of those things where they're going to test it and roll it out to a few people and test it and roll it out to a few people.
Okay.
So it's one of those things that's going to be a rolling target, but... Eventually, if you are logged into your YouTube account, be prepared if you end up watching a lot of kids' videos and the videos that their AI thinks are, you know, I think you're 12.
If you're the parent monitoring the stuff that your kid watches and checking out the stuff your kid watches?
And it's sort of like on with Christine's account. It's going to ask it'll actually talk you into saying, you know, you probably should set up a kids account. Well, we've got some standard settings for kids that are specific for
a listener asked, what about the YouTube Kids app? If you are specifically using a kids app.
The YouTube Kids app is going to be different from this. It's just, this is straight up YouTube that we're talking about.
Okay.
So if you're at YouTube.com or the YouTube app and you're browsing and it kind of just gets the feeling that you are not over 13, it's going to sit there and say, I'm going to protect you just until you can kind of just say that, prove to me that you're an adult.
Right. Now, is this going to go to other platforms like Google? Are we going to see that happening there?
I think it actually is going to start seeing it. In fact, Google's going to start rolling out similar age checks in the coming week. Spotify is doing that right now.
Really?
Because, again, the UK has put in this privacy law for kids, and the internet is global, so to comply with the UK law, it's just easier to say, okay, well, we're going to comply with the UK law. We might as well turn it on for everybody as well.
Do other countries have this kind of a law yet? Or is the UK
not at this scale.
The
UK is sort of the pioneer. There are some countries that say we can't have any social media at all. Yeah. For example, if you're in North Korea, you're not going to get any social media. But this is the first sort of free country where it's saying we got to protect the kids.
Well, you got some our attention and our listeners as well, and they've got good questions. So please let's clarify. This is not a third party company that's going to be involved in this.
It's YouTube doing it
YouTube,
themselves.
And it's not a human being. This is AI that's making that determination.
That's right.
So at this point, when it asks for proof that you are who you are and you're the age that you are, it's not going into the hands of someone, but it's going to the YouTube company.
That's right. And YouTube company is Google.
It's Google, of course. So. Sure.
847 area code question. VPN with YouTube is a workaround?
No, because you're still going to be logged into your YouTube account. So it's based on your account and what you've logged into YouTube. If you aren't logged into YouTube, by default, you're going to get the kids' privacy settings enabled for everybody. So unless you're logged in, you don't even have to worry about being tracked. But if you are logged in, YouTube's going to sit there and say, okay, let me see what you're doing. And are you old enough to see this? And for the most part, if, you know, for example, if I end up watching some really, you know, I'm not going to say adult content because it's not adult content, but it's content for grownups. Yeah. So I'm looking on my YouTube feed. It's cooking shows. you know, America's Test right. Kitchen, yeah. a couple of people who work for Nathan Myhrvold who have set up cooking stuff. There's the Build Show Network. All those videos are fantastic. And then some of the, you know, Linus Tech Tips and MKBHD and things like that.
Oh, stop. My head's exploding.
So most people are, you know, I guarantee you, YouTube's going to look at me and go, oh, God,
he's
old
guy.
You are old.
We have discovered that while we love having Joseph and his posse,
mm-hmm.
when they get here, we notice a bit of a reduction in speed in our Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi. Hmm. Kind of something like they're both working, and they're using it, and then Joseph is doing his thing, and we're just used to the two of us.
And we should say that you two really are working. While you're here, yeah. you're doing class stuff back to yep. California, and you're doing – so point is, 24 hours a day, there's a ton of stuff going on our Wi-Fi, and we've had a Wi-Fi that for us, it's fine. It's a DSL thing, and mm-hmm. you know, normally with the two of us, it's not that big a deal.
But we were afraid they wouldn't come back if we didn't improve the service.
Plus, I want to add, because there are a lot of people who are doing this, we're going to be adding some security cameras too.
Right.
So we wanted a system that would enable not only all of us to do what we need to do, but be good for the security cameras.
Now, a couple weeks ago, Patrick mentioned a router that we needed to get.
Well, we kind of realized that the DSL that you had was a 25 megabit DSL, which when you put it to the Wi-Fi was coming out at maybe 15. And then when we would show up, I'm not kidding, I actually am looking at this, there are 19 devices that we have connected to your network. Because, you know, it's me and my son and my wife, and we're working, and let's just say the 25 megabit DSL line was screaming under the strain.
Yeah.
So what we did was we basically upgraded you to cable. And went from 25 megabits to 1 gigabit. We were going to get to 1.5, but one's fine for us. And we were trying to figure out, okay, we were using a Google Wi-Fi router, first generation Google Wi-Fi router, which is Wi-Fi 5, and going, I don't know, that's kind of old. Maybe we can get something that's going to be a little better for the entire house. So we did a little overkill and got you the Ubiquiti Dream Router 7. This is not something you probably want to get for home. It's meant
but it's
really
wonderful.
It's meant for small businesses.
which, when you're here, it's a small business in your house.
Because technically, this is, for those who know technology, this is a 10 gig cloud gateway with integrated Wi-Fi 7. And 10 gigabit SPF plus fiber support. So if you ever do get fiber, you can plug fiber into this thing and get 10 gigabits out of it. So mm-hmm. we're not even touching this. Of all the devices in the house, by the way, that can connect to Wi-Fi 7, which is the latest standard, there is exactly one. It's Johnny's phone is the only one that has the latest. Mm-hmm. But that means your network is future-proof for when you're ready to go and get this new technology. But
for people who are wondering about this router, the cost of the router?
$279.
Now,
which is not bad.
We had a conversation a couple of weeks ago when you said, we're on our way there. And I said, we want to get the router that you mentioned on the radio. Yep. I said, I found it on Amazon. To which
you said, no, don't do that.
Explain why. Because I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. You want to buy this directly from the company, which is Ubiquiti, or Micro Center, but not from Amazon. The reason why is, if you go to Amazon and search for Ubiquiti Dream Router, and that's Ubiquiti with an I, Dream Router. A lot of people are taking the old Dream Router, which is a Dream Router 6, mm-hmm. and not putting the number 6 on it, saying it's a Ubiquiti Dream Router, and selling it for $100 more than the current latest Dream Router 7.
Wow.
And unless you knew what you were looking for, you go, okay, well, it's a Dream Router. It's like $389, and it's like, or I can do it $279 and get the latest one
from the company.
Yeah. Why wouldn't I do that? Or if you want to pick one up today, we stopped at Micro Center and we saw it on the shelves at Micro Center.
So the website to go to order it direct from the website would be?
Ubiquiti.com, UBIQUITI.com.
And it was a quick delivery, and I love the way it was packaged, because it wasn't going to be knocked around and kicked around. And if it was tossed into our hallway, that's okay, because it was well padded.
Being Apple savants, you will appreciate this. I like that Ubiquity was packed as well as Apple packs
very
their
much.
Products.
That's a lot of people say that is when you look at a Ubiquity. I mean, the reality is Ubiquity is very much like the meth of networking, because once you take the first step of getting anything from Ubiquity, you're going to want to go back and buy more Ubiquity products for lots and lots of money. You are hooked on this.
And this doesn't mean that it is difficult to operate, because simple to operate.
Yeah. And the thing is that if you have a little bit of technical skill, you can basically get into it. What I did when we were setting this thing up, you plug in an Ethernet cable to the Ubiquity router, plug it into your laptop, go into the local host 192.168.1.1. If you don't know that number, you shouldn't be getting a Ubiquity router. But if you just like, 192.168.1.1, that makes sense, I get it. And then you just log into the router and set it up, and it is super simple. And the nice thing about it is you have the ability to upgrade this thing to whatever you want to do in the future. And you know, we just put it in the middle of the house, and we're able to get in most of the bedrooms. Your house is so well built. So even though it's a gigabit into the house, we're getting maybe 250 megabits in certain rooms. But honestly,
You can live with that.
I'm good with that.
But the comparison in speed, because we did a speed test, and because we still have the DSL for the moment. And the comparative speed test, the upload speed was what, 15 on the DSL compared with what on the Ubiquity?
I forget with the upload speed, but I know the download speed was close to 300 in certain rooms, and even higher than that in other rooms. So, you know, honestly, anything above 40 is going to be fantastic for even 4K.
Well, the comparison that Patrick used is if you want to go from 25 miles an hour, which would be our DSL system, to 1,000 miles an hour.
Pretty much.
That's pretty much the deal.
I had to laugh because it took me back to the days of Website Wednesday night when we were talking about dial-up.
Yep.
And you would say, if you want to go 10 miles an hour on the Edens Expressway, continue on with your dial-up.
Yep.
And you know, we're beep, 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 beep. And we're going, well, but it's working. And then we realized we can drive the speed limit.
It's a completely different world once you get really fast internet.
And by the way, we should say, for those of you trying to write down, don't worry about writing down notes. Patrick's show notes will be posted on our blog within the next 48 hours.
And I would like to give a shout out to the company that we got involved with when we decided to make this change to cable. Before we take a break, the company was formerly known as RCN.
Yep.
And now they're Astound.
Astound.
I was astounded by their customer service.
They were so good. They were, years ago, we had cable with Crimecast, and we will never go back to them.
No.
But Astound, they were called within roughly 18 hours of when they were called. They show up
I ordered it at 10 a.m. on a Thursday. Yeah. They were there at 2 o'clock.
Right. And they said, we will be back tomorrow. And I went, They were.
Yeah.
And then a guy's going to come back and he's going to bury this in your backyard. They wouldn't do it till I came out to tell them where I was comfortable with them working around my garden. And it was a mother and a son, which blew me away.
They were good.
Because he kept saying, Mom, is this good? And she said, yep, son, you're doing good. And I thought, this is crazy.
So if it sounds like a free plug,
fine.
Yeah. But they were really good, and we like them.
Because we'd seen them in the neighborhood, but we decided we're not able to get...
you can't get fiber in your neighborhood.
Because we're like the cutoff point of fiber.
A little too far for fiber.
And that's interesting, because we kept checking, because we've been with AT&T for a long time, and they keep saying, you got fiber, and it's in our zip code, but not in our neighborhood.
Blocks away from us, it stops. Yeah. Again, answer the question. Person said, "Who is your internet provider?" So
Astound.
Astound is our new internet provider.
And they're wonderful.
I'm chuckling because every time Patrick said they'll be, I was like, I'd walk out of the room going, yeah, right, they'll be. And sure enough, they would be there when they said they were going to be there.
And this may be one of the only times that we've had a company say, yeah, we can do it within the next 24 hours and be there. Because we've had people before that would be there when they said they would, but that would be like 3 or 4 days or something like that.
And this was a big process.
Tomorrow, fine, do it, cut.
Again, they don't know that we're saying this. In fact, I said to the mom and son the other day, would you like to give me your name? No, we're just doing our job. I'm like, okay, cool. All right.
What a concept. Do your job.
Yep.
And again, don't worry about trying to copy down all the notes. Patrick's tech notes will be on our blog within the next 48 hours. So, now we're going to segue to, because we want to cover a lot of ground, ChatGPT.
You're going to see a lot of panicked social media posts and news articles in the next couple of days saying that you can read anybody's private ChatGPT chats on Google or on Bing. And let's clear that up. Pay attention. By default, your ChatGPT conversations, they're private. They're not shared. They're not indexed by search engine. That hasn't changed.
Do we know how that got started, that rumor?
Well, the media recently discovered that you did have a feature in ChatGPT that you can have a conversation, and there was a share button. And you could share this button. And I used that when I was teaching people how to use ChatGPT because I wanted to say, okay, here's the conversation I had. Take a look at this, and you can follow it. So if you clicked on share, you could share it. And there was an extra thing that showed up when you clicked on share and said, make this chat discoverable. And underneath it, it said, allow it to be searched in search engines.
Mm.
If you go and one, in a chat, click share, and then two, click make this chat shareable or discoverable, then it would be showing up in the search engines.
Oh.
But unless you opted in, your conversations are always private.
So it's not automatically
it's
happening.
It's not automatically or whatever. So are your conversations being shared? No. And no again, because it turns out that ChatGPT realized, you know what? This feature isn't working the way we want it to work, and a lot of people misunderstand it. So you know what? Let's just disable it. We're going to turn off the ability for you to share chats. It's gone. Oh. And ChatGPT is talking to Google and Bing and saying, hey, all these chats that you have that were shared with you with the permission, can you take them down? So it's going to be taken down.
Really?
So if somebody is telling you that your private ChatGPT chats are public or your private ChatGPT chats are being shared with Google or Bing, they're either misinformed or they're fear-mongering. That's just not what happened. It's if you deliberately shared and deliberately shared again, they were for a while available.
But no more.
And so you don't have to worry about it. So
interesting.
Perfectly safe.
Yes. So
good.
Under the heading of hacks, because it seems like every time you're on the show, we have to talk about hacks. What's the biggie this week?
TEA, as in I'd like to spill the tea with you.
Mm-hmm.
It is a whisper app designed to make dating safer for women. So
whisper app.
It's an opportunity for women to kind of talk in a back channel to each other. Think of it kind of like Yelp for dating safety, where a woman can go online and say, hey, I dated this guy. You do need to be aware this guy's got a temper. Or, hey, I've dated this guy. You do need to be aware he's married and has kids.
Oh, wow.
Or, I dated this guy. And by the way, here are 7 other of us who are now dating this guy. Just be aware.
So the Whisper app is...
It's just a way for you to
and it's private.
It's a private thing where it's kind of Yelp for guy. Women go in and do Yelp posts for, hey, here's this guy I was dating.
Interesting.
The reason why I kind of want Christine to chime in is, you know, women need to be worried about their safety.
Yeah, she got you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Through the internet.
Yeah, I bought him on the internet, on eBay.
But when we were going out for our second date, all of her friends, because we were going to Fashion Island in Newport Beach, and she had her friends were saying, okay, I'm going to contact you while you're just to make sure you're safe. And the fact that women have to do this is, you know, there's a need
it's a reality.
There's a need for people to kind of do that. So that's what T is for. You sign up for this thing. You choose an anonymous screen name. But to ensure that you're actually a woman, T requires you to go and either take a verification selfie, which is your picture.
I see.
Or, and this goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the hour, scan your photo ID to prove that you're a woman and not a vengeful man or a curious or vengeful man. So there are about 1.6 million people have signed up. It was the number two app on the social media stores for a while. Last Friday, Reddit and 404 Media reported that hackers had actually broken into T and had downloaded about 59,000 pictures and 13,000 T users' face scans and posted them over onto 4chan.
What?
4chan, by the way, is the cesspool of the internet. A lot of incel guys, and it's an anonymous a journalist actually once said it's the place the internet guy goes to throw up after a bad night. Which is a great line.
Accurate description.
He says that when it was talking about the pictures and things, it's from a legacy database that it was a couple years ago. However,
it was hacked.
It's still hacked. And the fact is that 4chan, being the terrible people of the internet, ended up taking the pictures that they stole from T and turning it into a hot or not competition.
Oh,
saying
no.
One woman and another woman taking their images, and people were voting on who was the hottest. And it's just like really, really sick. That's bad. It's really kind of bad. And then it gets worse. An independent researcher went in and looked, and it seems that you could, for a while, go, and if you knew a little bit of how the coding was working, you could actually go and read the private messages that women were sending each other on T. And these weren't old posts. These were recent posts. And 1.1 million messages from early 2023 to July this year. And these are deeply personal chats where women are talking about abortions, infidelity, phone numbers, things like that. T has disabled all direct messages, but just be prepared. There's a class action suit. If you are a T user, just be aware your information could be out there. Security lessons that you need to take from this, and we all need to take from this, particularly companies like YouTube and everybody else who's trying to make sure that the people are who they say they are. Selfies and photo IDs, if you're going to use them to scan and verify that somebody is who they say they are, you've got to delete them. You cannot keep these on your server, Google, or anybody else. And T kept them. I don't know why they did. That's just poor security hygiene. So I think you're going to start, the lesson learned here is every other company is going to require you to do photo ID verification. That's going to be, we're going to look at your photo and then we're going to delete it after we know it's
that
not going
legit,
to be stored
yeah.
there. And private messages, if you are a company offering any private messages for your people, it has to be end-to-end encrypted right now, full stop. Why T didn't do it is they probably just grew too fast and didn't think to do.
That was really sensitive stuff that
really
was being shared.
Really sensitive stuff.
And some of this is pretty basic security stuff that you would think they would have been doing.
You would think so, but again,
did it just grow so fast,
maybe? It just grew too fast, and I don't think they had a security person who said, you know, stop. But again, going back to the UK Online Security Safety Act, more and more sites are going to be required to do face IDs or some sort of scan. Spotify, as I mentioned, is now scanning faces of the users in the UK to verify if you are able to get explicit content. Yes, really. You're going to start seeing more and more companies require an ID to verify that you're an adult and, or in this case, verify you're a female. They need to have better security.
Yeah. That's really scary that it would end up, of all places, 4chan.
4chan, of all
I'm
places.
I'm like, really?
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, they had a field day with the information.
They're just terrible people.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what are the chances that right now someone is working on possible technologies for you to be able to submit a picture or whatever, and then it would automatically dissolve after 24,
Snapchat?
48 hours?
That'd be cool.
Something like that.
And or maybe tying it in. I can honestly see California probably doing this. We have our California digital photo ID. And I can see California offering some sort of thing where it says, okay, I'm just going to verify your age. That's it. That's mm-hmm. all I'm verifying. Mm-hmm. You don't get any more information about the user. And that should be pretty simple.
Okay. Well, Dr. Patrick Crispin joins us a couple times a month, typically in the midnight hour since he's on the West Coast, but he's here in Chicago now, so we dragged him in here early, and we decided since we were off last week, it was going to be a twofer night.
We have the rare event, boys and girls.
We do.
Of having both Patrick and Tom Appel in the same studio at the same time. I think the last time this happened was what? Some New Year's Eve broadcast?
Probably, yeah, a few years ago.
Yeah.
When we were waiting for the clock to spin over so we could look something like a 1, 2, 3, or we were like so entertained by the fact that it was going to be a series of numbers right there in front of us.
But we thought since we rarely have the opportunity to have both Patrick and Tom in the same studio at the same time, Johnny and I often talk about when we're testing cars that basically we are now driving a computer on wheels.
And Tom, often on Saturday nights, we find when we talk about recalls, many of them are actually software updates.
Increasingly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we decided since we have the two of you in the studio with us, we have a question for both of you. In your opinion, what is the most interesting slash welcome slash annoying integration of computers with automotive technology?
Patrick, you want to start?
And I've got an answer. The most interesting is something called SDVs, which are software-defined vehicles. Hmm. Software-defined vehicle just accepts what you just said, which is your car is a computer, and it's got all these features in it that could be added to it later, not by you taking it back to the dealer to go and add new bells and whistles, but could be a software update mm-hmm. that just goes over the air so that if for some reason or other they find a way to make lane assist better or whatever, they could push it to you as an update. So I think that is probably the most interesting and exciting thing. The most frustrating, the most scary thing is something called SDV, which is software defined vehicle. Because there is no way in hell that any automotive manufacturer is going to see this as a way for you to open up your wallet and pay monthly fees for features that you normally would get for free.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
BMW was the first to do this with CarPlay. CarPlay was available, and even most cars, you go and get it. If you have a BMW, you have to pay a monthly CarPlay fee to get the extra features. The idea that my company that I bought a car from is going to say, you know what? You haven't paid your turn signal fee this month. We're not going to have your turn signal work. Scares the hell out of me.
Yeah.
So it's a really positive thing, but is also really kind of scary.
Wasn't there some let me quickly okay. ask Tom, wasn't there some controversy about one of the manufacturers saying if you wanted a heated steering wheel you have to pay us for it?
That was BMW 2, I think.
Okay.
Toyota experimented with this as well and people revolted.
Yeah, like, that's
and everyone,
right.
Mary Barra, who's the CEO of General Motors right now, a few years ago talked about subscription services and how they were going to be a major part of General Motors income moving forward. And they were talking about $1 or $2 billion a year in additional revenue, a crazy amount of money for stuff we don't know we want yet, I guess. But one of the really interesting things about software-defined vehicles, and this is a huge plus, is that your car is forever young.
Yep.
At least until the software embedded or the hardware that the software is embedded on should age. But one of the interesting things that we saw, and this is very electric vehicle oriented, was that early in the release of electric vehicles a few years ago, vehicles would be released and they'd have a certain amount of range.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year that range would improve. But they were able to, in a lot of cases, update the software on the vehicles that they'd already sold to match that improved fuel economy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 40 years ago, no one was going to go and tweak your carburetor a year later. Mm-hmm. But now that there's electric vehicles, this works pretty well. The downside is this stuff is really tricky. And Volkswagen, for example, has failed massively to do this. This is part of the reason that they've taken this huge stake in Rivian. Mm-hmm. That $1 billion that's becoming $5 billion investment is Rivian is because Rivian has an electrical architecture that works really well. And Volkswagen is struggling with this. So it's getting harder for manufacturers to keep up with the expectations of this. And I think that truly being able to capitalize on the revenue potential here might be years away. Mm-hmm. Additionally, we know about Super Cruise and Blue Cruise, mm-hmm. Ford and GM's autonomous systems. They have a pretty good 3-year opening salvo where it's free mm-hmm. for a while if you buy the software.
Mm-hmm.
Next owner's going to have to pay. And after that, you're going to have to pay a monthly subscription. So the money will be there if people start using this stuff, and we'll see if they like it.
Wasn't one of the early examples the early version of Northstar?
Uh-huh.
And we had a 2001 Cadillac DTS. And we got to a point where they said, that Northstar version you have, it ain't going to be working with your vehicle.
Yeah, it was 2G.
But if you have a newer vehicle, and
you're talking OnStar.
Yes.
Okay.
And we then have a 2005 DTS, but now that version of OnStar is no longer working, and we don't choose to subscribe to whatever their new thing is that I guess we could subscribe to, but it would be tied to our phones, and we just say, sorry.
Yeah.
You remember when that was new, when OnStar was new?
Yeah.
There were all sorts of services that you could sign up for, including like a concierge package.
We had that.
We did.
Yeah, they'd call ahead for you, and you'd walk into the restaurant, and you had reservations.
I did it. We were treated like kings.
I loved it.
But no one latched onto that. Now I think it is exclusively safety and security.
Yes.
And I don't know what that is a month now. Is it $20?
Isn't the term for that, is it telematics?
Yes. Yeah,
and,
telematics.
And that's what that...
That word may be falling into disuse, but that is what we used to call it.
Well, and don't forget, for the software-defined vehicles to work, it requires a profound amount of data.
Yeah.
And it's data not only about the vehicle, but the data about you.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be tracking every single driver and every single passenger trying to find the most amount of information that they can so that they can customize the car for you or your passenger, but also define different revenue streams.
And Tom, didn't we talk a couple weeks ago about how much your car may be listening to you?
There's that. And Jill Simonillo, my podcast co-host, wrote about this. I have that on, it's up posted at consumerguide.com. But additionally, to that end, if you sign up for Blue Cruise or Super Cruise, in the agreement that you cannot avoid, you're agreeing to let them know where you're going. And they use your car to help map the interstates and byroads that they have mapped. So you are updating constantly the software for free. You're not getting paid for this information. And additionally, they know where you've been.
Mm-hmm. Before we let Patrick get out of here, I'm surprised you didn't mention that you had an experience riding around in a driverless car.
We did Waymos a couple times. We did them in Los Angeles, and then when we were in San Francisco, shocked at how well they worked in the streets of San Francisco, including over the hills. Because San Francisco hills are legendary.
Yeah.
And we took a Waymo from Union Square out to Ghirardelli. So you're going up and down, and I was shocked at how well it works.
That's good to hear. Did you try Cruise as well?
I haven't tried.
Defunct Cruise.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. And then there's Zooks that's being tested in Vegas, I think.
That might be right, I know that's more limited because Waymo's everywhere.
Waymos are everywhere.
And then Tesla is now just in Austin.
When are we getting them in Chicago? Does anyone know?
It may be a while.
Really?
We have things here they don't like rain and snow.
Oh, is that right?
Snow is a problem for autonomous driving.
Yeah.
Oh.
And it's not a problem that's been fixed. Actually, San Francisco is interesting because they have fog.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So they're experimenting with that. But snow is big bad.
Wasn't there a bizarre moment in San Francisco where a bunch of the Waymos just stopped in the middle of an intersection and...
That might have been Cruise, but I remember that story.
I think it was Cruise.
Traffic.
Yeah. And like people going, hour. There's nobody in these cars, and they're just sitting here.
And even with the vehicle that we got recently, There are notifications that in snow, rain, bad weather, because there are cameras all over the vehicle. And they just say, you know, depending on the weather, make sure that the cameras are clean. And,
or you'll get a message on your dash that says it's not functioning. Don't freak out. It's just because.
But people may have seen this already for stuff like obstacle detection. Like the exact same message.
Right. Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, Patrick, we're going to let you get out of here so you can get our boy home. Okay. Thank you so much. Great to have you on the show and fun to have both of them here at the same time.
Yeah. And Tom brought a package.
Yes.
Feel free to open it. It's not going to explode.
Yeah. And I will do a little explaining once you've seen it.
Okay.
All right.
A little, but I think you'll appreciate the historic significance.
Why are you doing it the difficult way?
See, you need to understand that my child bride is the one who chewed a present.
Package. So what? All right.
To find out what it was, and then blamed it on the dog.
So I chewed the end of the package, and I said, "I don't know. Cleo did that."
Okay, what is this?
We had a cat named Cleo.
This is a, it says, "Thank you."
Well, that's the box it came in.
That's the box
I wrapped that myself.
Okay. All right.
Oh.
And there is tape on top of tape on top of tape.
It's actually pulled open, so you can just pull that tab off.
So which one do I?
Right, the one right in front. Yeah. There. Right,
okay, there you go. I'm pulling it open.
All right, there's a note there that's
and
important.
And there is a note. Okay.
And this tells all.
How much time do we have this hour, Julia?
Well, it's you. Pick up the pace.
Ricardo Montalban may have touched this.
Oh, no.
What?
No.
Oh, I have a thought. It's not. It's not.
What? He's opening it. We're going to get there.
I was thinking it was going to be a small piece of rich Corinthian leather.
No, but it's close. It's really close.
It's a keychain.
Oh, it's a Cordoba. How cool.
It's a Cordoba keychain?
The 100th anniversary of Chrysler, and it's the 50th anniversary of the Cordoba.
Oh, is that right?
And the Cordoba changed everything, right? Because it was their first small
car.
But if you look at the first commercial for the Cordoba, if you watch that, the first thing you see... I bought me one, is this keychain.
Oh, this is too cool.
And then Ricardo Montalban picks it up and talks about how this small car is all he needs.
And so, I had a 75 Cordoba.
What?
What?
Yes.
Oh, my
God. Look
at
me. I'm like, what?
I did.
Oh, my God.
I had no idea.
Yes.
I interviewed Ricardo Montalban. You didn't tell me that before I talked to him. We were at the auto show.
I thought you knew that.
I did not.
Yes. It was kind
42 of a, years, and I'm just learning this.
It was a...
of course, I was in high school then, so, yeah.
Sort of a greenish color.
Okay.
Did it have rich Corinthian leather?
And this was... yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And this was back... This was the first generation with the round headlights.
Which is the best look.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They ruined it with the square headlights.
Yep.
So this is the 50th anniversary.
And this was the I believe the, what, the 318?
318 and 360.
So you had it the first year it was out.
Yeah, and your point is?
They were kind of hard to get. This was the thing about that car. It not only was it the first small Chrysler.
Right.
Every Chrysler until that time had been luxurious and large. And relatively
That's
pricey.
True, yeah.
This also basically kicked off the personal luxury thing.
And
the Monte Carlo was flying off the shelf, and then the Cordoba came in, and two years later, the Thunderbird.
Am I correct that the Cordoba was originally supposed to be a Plymouth?
Yeah, that's right.
And they wanted something to be in competition with the Monte Carlo, and it was the perfect size. Because I think either the Monte Carlo was out or they knew GM was working on the Monte Carlo and they wanted a personal luxury-sized car.
By 75, the Monte Carlo was insanely popular.
Okay.
Like half a million units a year popular. So the Chrysler people were like, we need some of that.
Mm-hmm.
We need a little of that action.
And this was a real step away from the Chrysler fuselage years with the long hood,
giant.
Short deck. Great styling.
Yeah,
so I'm looking at you like, who are you? I'm serious. Just matter of fact, like, well, I had one of those. Really?
This is cool. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Tom.
This is
so cool.
We have the only ones, I think. There are no more left on eBay.
Is that right?
So we we may have cornered the market on
because you sent me a picture couple of weeks ago, and I said, "Oh my gosh!" I said, "I interviewed him. How cool is that?"
This is also the hood ornament.
Yeah,
is that
it's
right?
Bigger? But yep. It's, yeah, same design.
Well, I would hope it's bigger.
So, so since Tom and I have two of the only ones, do we need extra security when we leave the building tonight?
Yes.
This is so cool.
Well, in Tom's case, he'll probably take the he'll take the wrong floor down since he's already knows the 17th floor in this building.
And I'll just be trapped here until 9 a.m.
Quick story: he sent me a text and said, 17th or 18th floor? We're wandering on the empty 17th floor, right?
Yeah. Well, we're scary.
You know what's funny about that?
Yeah.
Because Isaac is in security tonight.
But he was in the garage because they had a problem with the garage working tonight.
Right. But remember when Isaac came up to talk to us,
mm-hmm.
he went to the 17th floor.
Oh, that's right.
It all makes sense now.
See?
And we talked to security guard Isaac with Tom because Isaac had told us in passing that he had changed his vehicle from
a six-cylinder engine
to an eight-cylinder engine. And Tom said, "Oh, you've got to be kidding me." And the boy did that.
We did talk a little bit about that downstairs.
Oh, did
I
you?
Did learn that he kept the car transverse, which is very much a modern thing. And normally a transverse engine with a transverse transmission, not really going to support V8 torque. But somehow he made this work.
He did, yeah.
He's a fascinating kid.
Yes, he is.
Tom Appel is our guest talking cars, as we do a couple times a month. And a listener from a 319 area code said, "Can auto manufacturers really access everything on your phone when you use CarPlay or navigation and be able to collect speed and driving over highway lines and other info that could be sold to insurance companies?"
They can collect the driving information, and they kind of do anyway. That's what the black box is for, and mm-hmm. there is something doing that.
So when you're in an accident and they pull the black box, that data is there.
Yeah, but they're not harvesting stuff from your phone yet, as far as we know. And I don't mm-hmm. think they are. I think that's a little dubious. But
aren't there insurance companies that say, if you allow us...
Well, Allstate, that was one of their big pitches.
Insurance companies have been following your driving style.
Right.
And General Motors did, and this was tragic, sell some of that information.
Oh,
so
really?
They were exposed for that.
Yeah, but Allstate was giving discounts if you would volunteer. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you voluntarily do it, yeah, Progressive does that too.
Yeah.
If you agree to do that, they'll watch you how you drive for a month or something.
So we got to talk about what you're driving. What are you?
Yeah, what'd you drive, Don?
I am driving the 2025 Alfa Romeo Tonale.
Veloce. Excuse me?
The who?
Yeah.
Is that with X?
Alfa Romeo Tonale Veloce. Veloce is the trim level. Tonale is the newish, smallest Alfa Romeo. And in some ways, it's a bit disappointing because it's not really an Alfa Romeo. It doesn't ride an Alfa Romeo architecture. It doesn't have an Alfa Romeo engine.
So it's the name.
Yeah, it's really off-the-shelf parts from Stellantis.
So is it Fred Romeo?
Yeah. Not Alfa.
But it is actually pretty well sorted, and I'm kind of enjoying it. And there's a lot here to like. The interior is beautiful. The outside's really nicely finished. The paint is great. The ride and handling, the ride is very firm, but appropriately so for a vehicle this sporty. And it handles very well, and it makes great noise. And mm-hmm. this is the 2-liter turbo. There was a plug-in hybrid version. Terrible.
Mm.
So just avoid that. But the really nice thing about this is it's a great size, and it's surprisingly affordable for something that is semi-exotic.
Defined surprisingly affordable.
46 grand with a lot of equipment for this mid-trim level.
Okay.
And I'm looking at it, and I kind of think 60. You know, I think this would be like a 60 grand car, but it's not, which makes it very interesting. Additionally, if you're afraid of Alfa Romeo reliability, and if you've owned one in the past, you might be, this is really a Dodge. It's really a Jeep. The hardware underneath the skin is really just common Fiat Chrysler stuff.
Okay.
So what's nice is that the 2-liter turbo is tuned to be fun, and it really rides and handles well, and the interior is nice.
Is it a 4-passenger or?
Just barely.
Yeah, so realistically it's a 2-passenger.
Yeah, I fit just fine up front. There's no way an adult would fit behind me.
Mm.
So
okay.
It's pretty small. I technically probably subcompact.
Are you riding?
So only for the kids you don't like?
Yes.
Yeah. Are you riding low on the ground?
It's relatively low. I mean, it's a crossover, so it is what it is.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Alfa only sells one car anymore.
Have you posted pictures of it yet?
I don't think I have.
Okay, because I'm curious to see this, because in my mind, I'm thinking a vehicle that's low to the ground, hard to get in and out of.
No. This is a subcompact crossover.
Really?
And in that way, it's very practical. If you're not going to drive around with people in the back seat, pretty practical.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's considered a four-seater because it, for insurance purposes, it makes it a little cheaper.
And technically, it's a five-seater, but I wouldn't do that to any five people. There is a center seat belt in the back seat.
Yeah.
It's kind
so
of a joke.
You get to sit on the hump. Plus, you don't get a shoulder belt either. Well, you probably do, right?
No, not this one.
You really do draw the short straw.
You do, yeah. Yeah, you're uncomfortable, and if there's an accident, you're the first to go.
So, you know, can't take a joke.
Well, the blatant plug light has just started flashing. If people want to follow you, they should go to...
consumerguide.com. Everything is there. So you can check out our new car reviews. You can check out what I'm doing on the blog, which is some fun stuff. And you can, if you want to, you can stream the podcast right there. Mm-hmm. But people should subscribe to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And they can catch you live on Tuesdays when you're doing your show, right?
Oh, Mondays, yeah.
Oh, Mondays.
Mondays at TalkZone.com at 3 p.m. Chicago time.
Mm-hmm.
So they can listen live.
So what else have you driven lately that you went, wow, I hate to give this one up?
I have very mixed emotions about Land Rover, Range Rover these days, and they don't do well in reliability. But I did just drive the Land Rover Defender X Dynamic, which is, I think, the lowest trim level. And
with a big name like that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Right, and there's an X that's, for some reason, is positioned above X Dynamic. I'm confused. But this is their big, rugged, off-road looking thing.
Yeah.
And it is surprisingly refined, very nice inside. And also... given what it is and given its size, I was surprised that it comes in at about $85,000.
Oh.
That's a lot of money, but it is not a lot of money for a Range Rover Land Rover product. And it is fun to drive.
Does it feel top heavy? I always feel like they look top heavy.
And that's a great question because it looks top heavy.
It does.
It does look, it doesn't feel that way. It actually handles very well. And the fuel economy is surprising. This uses a relatively new 3-liter inline six with mild hybrid boost, and if people aren't familiar, sometimes it's referred to as 48 volt hybrid, but it's not full hybrid. The electric motor will not propel the vehicle on its own, but it does help the vehicle launch, and it takes a lot of a burden off the engine. But I was seeing fuel economy in the low 20s, which is really good given the mass and power.
Interesting.
But I like the vehicle a lot.
Do you think it'll be readily available? I mean, if somebody's listening down going, I've always wanted a Range Rover, and
you can get them now. What we need to worry
down
about
the road
is what happens with the tariffs and these vehicles, because there's a cap that the tariff, I don't think it's been ratified yet, but the tariff that we have with the UK caps things at 100,000 vehicles, and the UK usually goes over that.
Mm-hmm.
So at which point, $15,000 on something that costs $100,000 is a big, big tariff.
Mm.
So we'll see what happens with those, or if they just raise prices.
How wide is Land Rover's distribution?
Really easy to get in Chicago and on the coasts.
So the bigger cities, okay.
Yeah, there's a couple of dealerships around here. You wouldn't have any problem around here.
But if you go to a small town, people are like, what is it?
Yeah.
You know?
They probably don't see them.
Yeah. Well, it's like our friend had a Saab in Florida, and people are like, what the heck is that? You know, they just didn't see Saabs.
I finally got someone from Polestar to agree to be on our podcast, but I suspect that many of the listeners have never heard of Polestar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is an all-electric brand that is spun off of Volvo. Volvo is now a division of Geely, a Chinese company, and they're all electric, and they're very sporty and a little bit pricey, but they're really design interesting. They're good-looking cars, and they're having a very hard time launching this vehicle, but they're only in the they're only on the coasts, and just recently got a couple of dealerships here in Chicago.
Hmm.
So if you see something that looks a little bit like a Volvo, but maybe a little exotic, might be a Polestar.
Polestar, what an odd name.
It's an odd name. It's a heritage name from Volvo.
Okay.
Volvo used to race under that banner.
Oh, so if you're a Volvo fan, you would know that.
Yes.
That would be appealing to you. Okay.
Just cutting singles.
So which car sound system did this sound best on?
Wow, this is kind of gritty. Probably want something clean in the center. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a good question. It's been a long time since I've been in a Cadillac with the AKG system.
Yeah.
But it's super clean.
You
want to get the static in this song.
Yeah.
Like, you want that there.
I know we've told you about this before, but speaking of the Cadillacs, our favorite sound system is the one in our Cadillac, the Bose sound system. Man, it is so far better than any sound system, and this is from 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. there's just something about it.
It's just a warmth.
And this was back in the day when Cadillac would say, okay, yeah, you got your FM, you got your Sirius, and you got your AM, and they're all going to sound good. One of the things that drives me nuts was with too many cars today, the AM is an afterthought because they don't want to spend the money for the extra chip that gives you the sound that we're putting out on AM.
No, and on electric vehicles, they don't want to pay for the shielding, which is really inexpensive. Yeah. But the weird thing is, in Europe, they don't use AM.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Europe is small. German, you know, in like Germany, it's just FM, and there's not a lot of FM markets. There's like, I think, five total radio mm-hmm. markets in the country. It's relatively small, so they don't bother with AM. Plus, you've got the mountains everywhere.
And I know we've harangued, so I won't, but I will just mention, in an emergency, you want AM. You want the long-distance, local radio station reach that will tell you what's going on in the crisis in your community.
So buy one if you don't have one in your car.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, we want to spend a little bit of time because we have to do this every time Tom is on the show and talk about recalls. What's going on these days?
There's a little one I wanted to talk about if I could.
Mm, sure.
BMW just issued a recall for 136 cars.
What?
That's the total recall.
Okay.
But it's the kind of thing that kind of makes you feel good about the system, at least BMW and keeping track of things. It's batteries for their electric vehicles, specifically the i4, which is a small sedan, the iX, which is a midsize crossover or compact crossover, and the i7, big sedan. But there was something wrong with the batteries, and what happened was that some of the cells were produced too close together, and there might be a heat mitigation issue, or they might have been damaged by being pressed together. But they were able to identify specifically the 136 cars. They don't have to bring in 2,000 or 12,000 and inspect them. They know. And that's kind of cool, and that's the way the system should work.
What would happen if would the batteries explode, catch on fire? What would happen?
Fire is always a risk when a battery is compromised, but likely here those cells would just fail, and then you just end up with diminished performance over time. But you'd have nasty stuff, like if it went too long, maybe fire. Yeah, that would be bad.
But 136.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Okay.
Good for them.
Flip side of that is I'm going to interject mine because I don't know why, but I've gotten to the point where every week I have to look for computer hacks that we can talk about. And recalls. And I came across the story about Ford because it's not been a good year for Ford when it comes to recalls.
No.
I think that they lead, right?
By a lot.
By a whole lot.
The recall you're about to discuss isn't in this total. They've exceeded 5 million recalled vehicles this year, which is tragic because they haven't sold 5 million vehicles this year.
Well, they're recalling 312,120 vehicles due to a potential loss of brake assist that, of course, can result in a crash. So that's pretty serious.
If it happens while you're driving, it's probably incredibly unnerving because all of a sudden you have to press way harder to make anything happen. That'll confuse some drivers. And if you're in traffic...
What vehicles is this involved?
Well, they said that if five different models of Fords... the latest recall comes just over a month after they issued a recall affecting 200,000 vehicles. That one involved the electrical system and the latches and the locks on the cars. Let me see what the five are that they... I thought I had this... what vehicles are being recalled? The 2025 Ford Bronco, the 25 Ford Expedition, the 25 Ford F-150... the 25 Ford Ranger, and the 25 Ford Lincoln Navigator.
So this is all their big rear drive trucks.
Yeah.
Has there been any kind of a survey with all of the recalls that Ford has had? What manufacturing plants are mostly involved? Or because some of the parts are sourced from different vendors, does that not come into play?
Yeah, all these recalls seem to be supplier issues.
Okay.
I don't think any of them have actually been manufacturing issues. And I don't know if we talked about this or not, but an interesting survey, Plant Moran, they're in Illinois, actually, consultancy to the auto industry, did a survey, and they do it every year. And every year they determine which manufacturers have the best relationship with their suppliers. Mm-hmm. And every year Toyota has the best relationship mm-hmm. with their suppliers. Mm-hmm. And, Toyota, Lexus are at the top of all these quality things. Well, Stellantis and Ford have the worst relationships with their suppliers, and they're at the bottom of this quality list. And it's interesting, and it's not just like suppliers have this ugly relationship. Mm-hmm. It's doing things like changing things midstream, getting things to them late when you need them. Yeah. And this happened when the Navigator was new. They rushed that thing to market, and mm-hmm. suppliers couldn't really keep up, and it was plagued mm-hmm. with issues and recalls and defects. And that's the kind of thing you want to kind of smooth out. And for mm-hmm. whatever reason, man, Toyota knows how to do this stuff. And suppliers know what's coming down the line. Toyota doesn't drive down the prices too hard. And the result is really good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe this is a case of logic just doesn't apply. But why wouldn't a manufacturer, Ford, say, let's take a little more time before we rush this thing into production?
It's a good question, and part of this—
Wouldn't they be saving money overall if they did that?
They would be, and it's funny because Toyota was the company that dragged its feet going to electrification. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not going to really do this. We're just going to kind of do what we were doing. Ford rushed into electrification, is now in a position where they're changing a bunch of plans. They actually canceled the product. It was going to be an Explorer Side EV. They've canceled that. They've got this huge manufacturing facility that they're slowing down the production of because it's billions of dollars. And it's going to be kind of, what do they call that, waylaid capital, where they're going to have mm-hmm. the money invested in this plant way before they're going to build vehicles there. Mm-hmm. So stranded capital, that's the term I was looking for. So Ford's had a hard time dealing with this electrification thing. Strangely, General Motors is having a better time of it somehow, mm-hmm. even though they're in the exact same boat. They had all sorts of EV plans, mm-hmm. many of which are on hold.
I want to take you back to this because if I got your attention, you own one of those 25 Fords or Lincolns. The letters are going to go out on August 25th. This is August 3rd now. August 25th, you can call your dealer. You can use the number 25S77. So you call and say, hey, I'm calling about this recall. You might find out it's an over-the-air recall, which would be great.
Oh.
So you wouldn't have to go into the dealership with your vehicle. But they'll let you know because it could be software for the electronic brake booster module that would have to be updated. If that happens, of course, that's free of charge, or it might be an over-the-air update. So any other – you had the 136 cars recalled.
Yeah, there was one other one here that's worth talking about. Years ago, Nissan introduced a new technology. It was variable compression, mm-hmm. a crazy thing to have in an engine. But it was the VCT, variable compression turbo. And a lot of people sort of scratch their heads and like, why haven't they had any problems with this? Well, they have.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. You asked?
Yeah, it's kind of in a big way. It's something like 350,000 units. Mm. But it involves a lot of cars. 440,000, I'm sorry. The Rogue, the Altima, the QX50, which is an Infiniti, and the QX55. All these vehicles, different model years between 21 and 24. But big recall. And it's not entirely clear what they're going to do yet. The problem is drive shaft defects and then a bunch of related little parts inside the engine. Mm. So this might be another massive engine replacement.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
yeah.
Do we know, speaking of engine replacements, where are we on the Toyota timeline of replacing engines?
I believe they are slowly replacing those. I need to check and see how long people are waiting, mm-hmm. actually.
Because wasn't it that it would take at least a day to replace an engine?
Just one engine.
Yeah. And then they're replacing the engine completely, like out in mm-hmm. new engine. So that makes everything a lot easier than fixing it. Hmm. But engines are very expensive, so...
And not easy to just drop into a car.
No.
Wow. I did want to sneak in a couple of our listeners' questions because this one, I mentioned this to you just a moment ago, and you said, I want to answer that question. Does Tom have an opinion on the long-term durability of the three-cylinder turbo engines?
Yeah, it's a great question. And one of the interesting things about forget the displacement, but three-cylinder turbocharged engines is they're everywhere. The Ford Bronco Sport, for example, standard engine is a three-cylinder. And the very popular Chevy Trax, mm-hmm. Which is brought in from Korea by General Motors, and the Buick Envista. Those are also three cylinders, and they produce plenty of power. They are a little bit rough, as you might think a three-cylinder be at a stoplight or an mm-hmm. idle. But the question about reliability is interesting. They've been around for a while, and there have been more three-cylinder cars, I think, than we remember. But they might actually last longer. The crankshaft is shorter.
Okay.
So that should be more durable. There are fewer valves. There are fewer cylinders. So there's a lot here going on that suggests like reliability might be better.
Hmm.
Now, it does quake a little bit more, so maybe that affects longevity. But I don't think there's any indication that they're going to be short-lived at this point. And there haven't been any issues that I can think of. And Ford was selling modern three cylinders mm-hmm. 15 years ago. And those were just fine. I don't recall any recalls on those, and they're still out there.
Dumb question, but I've been known to ask them. What was the smallest cylinder engine, and what was the largest? I know there were 12 cylinders and I think 16 cylinder engines.
Cadillac did a 16. Lincoln did a 12 and a 16, way, you know, back in the glory days. And then Bugatti was selling a 16 cylinder engine.
In fact, what wasn't there, was it during the 80s, 90s that Cadillac had a like a design thing that was this Cadillac? It was called the Cadillac 16.
It was called
wasn't
the 16, it? Spelled out, and it's one of my favorite concept cars of all
yeah.
time. Long hood, short deck. If you were a big fan of Eldorado design,
yeah.
especially through the 60s, the 16 is a car you want to look at.
Yeah.
And if anyone's listening, just find a picture of the Cadillac 16.
Just gorgeous.
Gorgeous car. And it had a 16 cylinder. What was interesting about the engine, it was a push rod engine, mm-hmm. the concept engine for it, not an overhead valve or overhead cam. So kind of true to tradition, but beautiful car. They were kind of sort of thinking about actually doing a 16 or a 12, but the mm-hmm. time wasn't right. And then there was that whole bankruptcy thing.
And it's a case of, I don't know if the whole hood and everything that was under it would fit in your garage.
No.
It was such a it was a beautiful long hood.
Well, also beautiful. If you went to the auto show to look at that concept, the engine, they had an engine out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
That was beautiful. It was
yeah.
just so much art involved, so much craftsmanship.
By the kind way, if you hear Johnny coughing, it's because we've been munching on these wonderful Payday bars.
No, I haven't.
Oh,
it's called I've talked for 4 hours.
Oh, that's right. This is the 1 o'clock cough
yeah.
segment.
Yeah. I'm predictable about some things.
One of our favorite segments of the show. It's the 1 o'clock.
And I'm trying to get away from the microphones. I've got it turned off. I'm dipping underneath the table. So please forgive me.
So what was the fewest amount of cylinders in any vehicle?
There were some ones out there going back.
Really?
Yeah. You'd have to go back to like the 50s and 60s mostly, but there were some one cylinder.
How much
things.
Horsepower would you get out of a one cylinder engine?
You're not getting to 30, I don't think.
A three legged horse.
You know what was interesting is that Saab was doing two cylinder four stroke.
Okay.
Or two stroke, I'm sorry, two stroke engines. And those produce an awful lot of power for their size, but two stroke isn't really a thing that you can bring forward because of emissions things, but they were loud, they were buzzy, and really, I understand,
buzzy
and fun to drive, I understand, but that was the nature of Saab.
Quickly, let me ask you, how come Ford is discounting the Edge, a listener asks?
The Edge has been discontinued.
So that's why they're discounting them. They want them off off their property, right?
Yeah, the Edge is all gone, and what's left of the Edge is the similar Lincoln Nautilus, but it's not that similar anymore, and that's imported from China.
Ah.
The Edge is a good vehicle.
A listener asked, why don't auto manufacturers offer vinyl tops, Tom?
Hello, Jim. Thanks for the question. Jim's a fan of both your show and my podcast.
Thank you, Jim.
Whatever happened to vinyl rows? I mean, that was a really weird styling period.
I hated it.
And the thing about that, now your Cordoba was probably...
It had a vinyl top.
Yeah, because Cordoba's almost...
And there were some of the vinyl tops, and I want to say it was on the Dodge Magnum, where... In the C-pillar window, you had these bars that were over the vinyl top, so you could kind of see out, but there were the bars, too. It was
weird.
Interesting.
Vinyl was weird, and the only thing, vinyl, the best I understand vinyl is it was supposed to sort of look like a convertible. That's the best I can make of that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't even explain really weird stuff on Chrysler products where the vinyl was in the front half of the car. Like,
yeah.
I don't even understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And it would stop, and then you'd have a painted seat.
Yeah.
It was a very weird look.
That was awful.
And
but it was better if you had a bustle on the back. You know, one of those big tires on the back. It's like,
I'm really in the minority. I liked the original Cadillac Seville with the bustle. I like the, what was the Lincoln? The Lincoln Versailles. Was it the Continental?
Yeah, it was called the Continental. Yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
But they where the way they did the kind of a slant.
Yeah, Cadillac did that and Lincoln did that. And then Chrysler did that with the Imperial.
Yes.
Same look. Yeah. Same time. You
could... that was with the Frank Sinatra Imperial?
Uh-huh. Yeah, like 81.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I don't know what that look was, but it was short-lived, but it was popular for a moment.
For a moment.
And the Frank Sinatra edition, you would get it in blue, as in
you get it your way.
Old blue eyes. And it would come complete with, I believe it was cassettes of all of Sinatra's albums.
Gosh.
That collection of cassettes or 8-tracks were available at the time are more valuable than Cordoba keychains. But you can find them on eBay, and people collect those.
That's wild.
By the way, one other question before we wrap this up. We teased and said we were going to talk to you about the interesting car you're going to be getting later this week.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and I'm going to pronounce it wrong again, even though, Johnny, you had corrected me on this before. But it's the Ford Bronco Strope. Was it two syllables? Strope, but Stroppe.
I looked it up. They were saying phonetically it was Strope.
Yeah, wasn't it named after the guy who designer?
Mm-hmm.
Who I can't remember if he drove or someone drove for him, but the vehicle did very well in racing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a tribute to him. It's got a really fabulous 70s looking paint job, but it is a version of the vehicle with some very serious off-road equipment and a white grill, which is a wonderful 70s throwback, and white wheels. So very cool, but I get that this week.
And we're going to connect with you so we can see it with our own selves.
But does it have a vinyl top?
Stop it.
It does not.
And it doesn't play 8-tracks either. So.
Darn.
Thank you so much for coming in tonight.
My pleasure.
Yeah,
thanks,
it's so good to see you.
And thank you for the Cordoba keychain.
You're welcome.
Yes.
Next year I want vintage Corinthian leather.
Corinthian, yes.
Corinthian leather. It is once again time for Sports Between the Sheets. Gabe is back. Hey, Gabe.
You were working during the day. We heard you doing traffic. We heard you. Well, you were all over the place, weren't you, the last few weeks?
Yeah, I've been back and forth covering for everybody else here, it seems like. So, and it's this week has been quite the week in Chicago sports. And,
yes.
Well, good and bad.
Speaking of that, I have to jump right out of the box. I have to jump on. How about them Sox?
And as of tonight, now they exceed their wins from the entire season last season.
And they have more home runs post All-Star game than any other team in the majors.
Crazy.
Well, the way that they've played since the All-Star break has been impressive. And as I said at the beginning of the season, I said there's something different about this team. It may not translate to success on the field, but obviously Will Venable has this team doing something that they were not doing last year and probably not the year before either. So 50 wins is definitely in the realm of possibility before the season ends in the next couple of months. I look forward to seeing what else this team does, and it's good to see that this slew of young talent is slowly starting to come together.
And from what I'm hearing, the new kids, the young talent, like each other. They're hanging out. They've been seen at Bulls games and some other things, and it seems like they're really enjoying playing together. And like you said, Will Venable, he deserves a ton of credit for the turnaround that appears to be happening. Are they going to make the World Series this year? No. But if they keep on track a couple of years down the road, I wouldn't be surprised.
And, you know, having the guys gel together like that and build that chemistry is so important, especially when, you know, when these are guys that are just fresh out of the minor leagues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all the young guys that we've been hearing about for the last year and a half. And now it's their chance to shine. And this is how they bond and it works for the team. I'm all for it. And, you know, just you know, like you said, Will Venable's definitely been a difference maker. And we'll just have to see what happens moving forward. I mean, certainly, you know, the way that they won some of these games, I mean, tonight it was their pitching because they only scored once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's happened a couple of times during the stretch. There's been stretches where look what they did against the Phillies, how they were knocking the ball out of the park against the Phillies. The Phillies are a playoff contender.
Mm-hmm.
So they've beaten teams that are playoff contenders, and, you know, they've also beaten some of the bad teams as well. But, I mean, just getting just getting that mixture of wins against both good and bad teams just to kind of, you know, gauge, you know, the lay of the land, so to speak, and, mm-hmm. you know, to see what lies ahead for this team in the future has definitely been fun to watch since the All-Star break. And now it's just a matter of finishing strong, and hopefully you carry that momentum into next year.
And I just happen to think of one other thing. They only play the A's one more game, right? So that means they have won this series. So they have won, what, three or four of the last series they've played?
Since the All-Star game.
Since the All-Star game, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've been on a pretty good run since the All-Star break. Perhaps maybe that's what re-energized them, even getting that time off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So talk about the Cubs. It's shocking that they've slipped now two games out of first, right, as of tonight with today's Saturday's loss.
They were two games after they lost those first two games to the Brewers, got back within one after they beat the Brewers. But then again, the bullpen. What can we say about the bullpen? Mm. They let them down again today. Obviously, you know, Matthew Boyd, he was an all-star for a reason. You saw what he did through seven innings.
Sure.
Held Baltimore scoreless. The problem is, once you turn the game over to the bullpen, they haven't always been dependable. They're not terrible. I'm not saying that they're terrible. It's just that they have had their games where they blow the lead and the Cubs wind up losing as a result. And when you're trying to win a division title, that's not what you need from your bullpen. Now, they made trades this week to kind of upgrade that aspect of their team, but obviously, they didn't pay off today, as we all saw what happened when they blew that lead against Baltimore, one of the worst teams in baseball, might I add.
Head by three in one inning, just like that, it was gone. One of the sad pieces of sports news last week, obviously, was the passing of Ryne Sandberg. I have to say that I am so impressed with the way the Cubs treated his passing.
Yeah.
You know, 23 seconds of silence before the game. Thankfully, he got to see his statue unveiled and with his family.
And it was emotional watching people come outside Wrigley Field to leave flowers just to pay tribute to him.
Yeah.
And with the All-Star game coming back to Wrigley Field in 2027,
yes,
I'd like to see what they plan on doing to honor Sandberg then, because when the last All-Star game was at Wrigley Field, not only was Ryne Sandberg in that game, I want to say he was in that home run derby as well that year.
I think you're right. Oh, yes. So, I forgot about you.
So,
are right.
So they would definitely have to do something to honor him then as well, because there was a time where he was the only All-Star that the Cubs had put out every year.
Yeah.
Okay, before you put your news hat back on, a week from today is the first Bears game. Can you believe it already?
My wife is already cringing.
And they're playing the Dolphins on Sunday the 10th?
Right. And today is actually their family fest at Soldier Field. And I've covered that in the past. And why they always do it when Lollapalooza is going at the same time, I don't know.
Yeah, timing is everything.
So if you're heading down there today, just be prepared for lots of traffic. Be prepared for gridlock for a few hours. It's going to be a rough afternoon along the lakefront, but you know, fans will get to see the team. You know, they'll practice at Soldier Field. You're going to get the first look at them. Next week, I will say this, if you're heading to the Family Fest today, take advantage, because you'll see the starters today. You probably won't see them next week. I mean, if the starters do play maybe a series or two, nothing more beyond that. Next week will be mostly, you know, the bench players. You're sorting out, the back end of your roster. You're also trying to fill other spots as well, because, you know, there's some starting positions that are undecided. You'll see some of that going on, but for the most part, I don't expect to see the first team guys getting a lot of reps next week, but it'll be good to see some football again. It'll be good to see the Bears get back on the field, and we certainly miss football, and there's, you know, we have a lot of anticipation for the Bears this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, my wife is already cringing because she knows that for the next 6 months, I'll be occupied every weekend when I'm not working. I'll be in front of my television watching football.
Well, it looks like for the preseason rundown, we've got a number of evening games, because after next Sunday's noon game, it's a 7 p.m. game. Then it's a 7:20 Friday night game.
Yeah, well, normally that's how it used to be. Friday and Saturday nights is what normally we used to be, but it was only within these last few years that they were doing a lot of these, you know, 12 noon games for preseason. Normally you would do it at nighttime. So it'll be good to see the games come back at nighttime, especially, you know, like I said, if I'm anchoring overnight, and then of course I sleep through half the game the next day.
You can sleep and watch it at 7:15 in the evening.
Exactly.
Wow.
But you know, like I said, don't expect too much next week from the Bears. Like I said, the starters, if they do play, yeah, it won't be much. It'll be mostly just the younger guys getting on, the backups getting all the reps.
What are you going to be looking for?
Like I said, you're just looking to see who can do what, especially with the rookies. You'll probably see a good dose of the rookies. And it'll be good to see, you know, what they can do, how they hold up in a game situation. They're transitioning from college to the pros. Now we get to see what they're made of. And there's no game planning in preseason. You're just running through your playbook just to see what works and what doesn't. And it'll be nice to see, you know, which players have improved from last year. And, you know, that's really all you're looking for. You're just looking for improvement and you're looking for development. You're not looking for anything in terms of, you know, what can we expect from this team during the year? Because, like I said, the starters are going to be, you know, like I said, if they play at all, it'll be very limited reps for them.
You're just looking for football is what it is. That's what it's down to.
Yeah, that's right. I just want to see the hitting.
Yes. All right. Put your news hat on. We will continue. We're slipping into the last segment of the show. So,
I know.
Yeah. Stay with us. We got a couple more things up our sleeve, and we're going to get to some text and some things you need to know about.
And get your dial and finger ready, because we're going to be looking for our last caller in a little bit, too. Yep. Oh, by the way, buddy guy is celebrating a birthday. His birthday was last week, July 30th.
Mm-hmm.
And
89.
And we had to get Buddy. It's been too long since we've had Buddy in the studio. We got to do that again.
Well, our friend Lynn Orman was at Buddy's birthday celebration on Wednesday night at Buddy's Club, and she wrote about a story that when we interviewed Buddy, he wasn't doing the polka dots. He wasn't all about the polka dots. Now he wears polka dots. He plays a polka dot guitar. And she says, from the stage, he told a beautiful story that you all should know about if you're a Buddy fan. He wears polka dots and he plays a polka dot guitar, in honor of his mother. The young guitar protege from Lettsworth, Louisiana, came to Chicago in 1957 to play the blues. His mother never got to see him play, but he honors her every time he steps on stage, and so does his children and his grandchildren. And last night, she said, was so special, talking about his 89th birthday. He was there with family and friends and fans from around the world. He looked wonderful in his white and black polka dot jacket and white cap, and he did look wonderful. His smile glimmered. His family brought his birthday cake on stage, which was a polka dot Cadillac. That was his cake, a polka dot Cadillac. He had promised his mother a polka dot Cadillac when he made it big. She said, it's the best cake I ever had, and they served red velvet cupcakes to the audience. Buddy stuck around. He signed merchandise, his new vinyl and CDs. Last night was his record release, as well as his birthday. Again, that was Wednesday. And he went back on stage to join his Chicago Blues family, Jimmy Burns, Billy Branch, Ronnie Baker Brooks, Wayne Baker Brooks, Edward G. McDaniel, Carlos Showers, and Bryant Parker. And they just tore it up. And he said he ain't done with the blues. She had a great picture of the polka dot Cadillac cake. Look at this, Steve. White cake with black polka dots.
That is so cool.
And it's an old school Cadillac with the fins made into a cake. So thank you, Lynn, for sharing that with us, too, because I remember the story that Buddy told us when he was on with us. It was about his first guitar.
And he made the guitar from a screen.
He got whooped, as he put it, by his mama, because he took in the screen door
some of the pieces of wire.
He pulled the wire out of it and made that his guitar strings, which makes my fingers hurt when I think about it.
You're singing my song. I don't even want to go there.
I feel like they would bleed if you're playing a screen string. But he was very emotional when he talked about that, you know, being a little boy and all he wanted to do, because he'd go down to juke joints and he would stand on his tippy toes and look in the window and he'd see these people just tearing it up. And he wanted to do that. He wanted to play that kind of music. So we're very lucky that we have him in Chicago.
Yeah.
89 years old last Wednesday.
I'm going to have to check with our friend Tom Hambridge.
Because he was working with him.
Tom is the guy who has produced the last couple of Buddy's albums and plays drums with him. And we first met Tom along with Susan Tedeschi.
Mm-hmm.
And this was years ago. And Tom said, you got to check out this this new kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Susan had her first album, Just Won't Burn. And he has had a very successful career. Somewhere, we have to dig up some of our audio archives. Because remember, somewhere we have some audio from the night that Tom came in. He had a solo album out.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, I forget what he was drumming on. But I believe he had a guitar player with him, and he was drumming on something in our studio, but he made it work. But,
well, we have a new song that we played when Patrick was in here, a new computer song about social media.
Yeah.
And it was by OU.
Yeah, I'm honestly not sure how to pronounce her name, but I want to find out a whole lot more about her because I love the song. It's O-U-G-H. M-I-T-E, O-U-G-H-M-I-T-E, and it's called Social Media Blues.
So I said it was a man, and you are saying it's a woman, and a listener said, I found this information on the person you were talking about, and ironically, in the description, they do the he slash she. Like, whoever's writing the description of this
sounds like AI written.
Possibly.
Because I'm discovering that on a lot, particularly on Facebook. I have been reading articles about people that I know.
Like Elvis.
Like Elvis.
Yes.
And it talks about Elvis doing his comeback in 1969, but she wasn't sure how she would be able to perform on stage. And what? Huh? Yes. Hello?
Yeah. Well, thank you to the listener who took the time to look that up for us. But I had to laugh when I looked and it said he slash she. So you are equally confused.
By the way, we should mention next week another full show starting at 9 o'clock. And we'll be talking with our buddy Wally Podrajic, who is our resident, among other things, our resident Beatleologist. And he will be appearing and calling us from the Fest for Beatles Fans next Saturday night. And I believe next week we will probably have Patrick from California.
Yes. Yes, they're going back, I think, Thursday of next week. But they've got a whole bunch of more things that they're going to sneak in.
And one of the things we may do next week, we've talked about doing this, and we had some people saying, it'd be fun if you did that. We talked about how, we usually get at least one new piece of music a week.
Mm-hmm.
So we may take a portion of the show and just play some of the things that we're listening to now, some of the new things that we bought.
Like we just received a CD yesterday. And
It's by the group that closed out Stephen Colbert's show last week, and we loved it.
The duet, Rachel and Vilray.
Wasn't it called West of Broadway?
And oh yes, and
killer stuff.
Vilray is a wonderful guitarist. Mm-hmm. The tone on that guitar, the thing that they did live at the end of Colbert's show. Look it up on YouTube because Colbert sang along with them. But the song was wonderful. If you've ever liked Broadway, if you've ever liked theater, you'll get it. But it's not like a show tune thing. It's funky. It's cool. And I mean, as soon as they were done, I went right to Amazon and put in the purchase for their CD, which was released on Friday, and we
got a copy for us and a copy for my brother.
So we thought we're still buying this music. I think we received a couple of CDs in the past week.
We have been averaging about one or two CDs a week for the past month or so.
We got two more mailed to us because we're going to have in studio with this
Carl G. Marisi
is going to be in studio with us at the end of August. And as we slip into September.
And if you're wondering, Carl G. Marisi from the Buckinghams.
Yep. Yeah, he's done a new solo album, and he'll be in to talk about that and share that with him. And we're lucky that we can get him because he's so incredibly busy. I mean, touring like crazy with the Buckinghams. And we're also going to have a record release for Terry White.
Oh, yeah.
And we first met Terry when he was a member of the Yellowhammers.
Yeah.
And he's been very active as a solo performer and has a brand new album. So he'll come in here.
And John Barry.
Yes, John Barry, the country singer John Barry is celebrating, I think it's the 30th anniversary of his, and he had a half dozen top 10 mm-hmm. songs, but this was his number one song, and he's going to be coming out to Hey Nannies. We need to talk to somebody at Hey Nannies because they're doing some great booking. Ides of March there tonight. They've done two nights, sold out, crazy crowd. Mm-hmm. I'm just so impressed with the people that they're bringing in, and John Barry, it's going to be an evening with him.
Uh-oh. Lights are turning blue.
Yep.
And I'm here.
I hear it. There it comes.
Zamboni. That means we better get ready for our last caller. If you would like to be our last caller, 312-981-7200. That number again is 312-981-7200. And you don't have to have anything pithy to say, mm-hmm. although if you choose to be pithy, okay.
If you can sit up and hold a phone.
Yeah.
We ask that you not be on speakerphone, okay? Because it causes this freaky, echoey sensation, and we feel like you're in a basement somewhere in the catacombs.
And as long as you haven't won anything from this here radio place within the past 2 months or, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 97
two
weeks,
months.
Whatever.
Oh, and you're confusing things now.
Yeah, well, see, it's getting near the end of the show.
I know. You're running out of words.
We're running out of words and brains. Mm. So,
well, we walked in here with a deficit, so. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll take a break, and lines open right now if you want to try to be our last caller. 312-981-7200. Again, 312-981-7200. So, and a reminder, full show next week. And one of the things we'll be doing is talking with Wally Podrajic, a resident Beatleologist. Yes, the same guy who wrote the Watching TV book, but he's also a Beatles expert. And he will be live from the Fest for Beatles Fans going on next week.
Right now, it's time for our last caller. And I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say number two. Let's go with line two.
If that's what you really want to do.
I think line two will do it.
Let's see, line two would be
Dennis.
Dennis. Hi, Dennis. Where are you calling from?
I am calling from Northwest Indiana.
Whereabouts in Northwest Indiana?
Towards Michigan City area.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, nice to have you along here tonight, Doug.
Thank you. Long-time listener to both of you. Big fan.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you. Why are you up at this hour?
I'm at work right now. I am the outside ground patrol unit at a prison.
Really?
Whoa. Hello.
Yes.
How long have you been doing that?
15 years.
Yeah. Do you get to be up in a tower with a big flashing light?
Well, I occasionally do, but there's also a ground unit. Mm-hmm. And
so you're actually walking the grounds?
No, I'm in a armed vehicle.
Oh, wow.
I'm trying to imagine your mindset being a ground patrolman at a prison and listening to us. I'm trying to figure out what...
How does that work?
It works, trust me. Just cross your fingers and nothing bad happens.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of the light and the dark in the world for both sides, right?
Correct.
I like to think we're the light side of the world, and you're dealing with it.
You make my night go well.
Well, now, were you with us back in the day when we were doing this Monday through Friday?
Yes.
You were? Okay.
But I was a Chicago police officer for years, too, a detective.
Ah, okay. All right. Now it all comes clear.
Yes.
How many years have you been working at the prison?
15.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. You said that. I bet you could write a book.
Oh, but that's my plan. Once they
really?
Two more years and I'm done, yeah.
Well, good. Yeah. We'll include...
And actually, the story's on both sides.
Oh, I bet.
Well, I was just going to ask because everyone expects that you've got really bad stories, but I bet you've got some interesting good stories too, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, everybody in life deserves a second, even a third chance.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to improve somebody's life and make them whole.
And sometimes
it
works.
Some you can.
Yeah. Yeah. And how many years
even were you, outside of work?
How many years were you a Chicago policeman?
22 years until I got shot twice and
what?
Stabbed oh, once. Yes.
Holy yeah. smokes!
And survived it all.
Well, thank you
but
for
it's
what.
All good.
Thank you for doing what you did. But I'm thinking.
I have to ask, after having been shot and stabbed, when you left the Chicago Police Department, what made you decide to stay with police work?
Well, it was in my background, mm-hmm. and it was easy for me. And actually, as tough as things are, a prison is much easier than being out there.
Oh, I'm
in
sure.
public.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
it's more predictable, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because there's a very good chance that you're not going to run into some guy that's carrying a Glock when you're on the prison grounds, right?
No. If you do, it's a bad day.
It's a very bad yeah. day, yeah.
I'm curious.
I run into inmates once they get out, not all the time, but
really?
Four or five times a year I'll run into in public, and I've never had a bad interaction.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really nice to hear.
But now, I did
They'll
the math.
Actually come up and shake my hand. You know.
Yeah. I did the math. You're pushing 40 years. Is that what you're going for, 40 years?
Correct.
And then you'll retire?
Correct.
Yeah. Then
I semi-retired once, and I'm going to retire in a couple of years.
I
got to do something. I travel a lot. So.
Ah.
I've been to 43 countries. And
what?
Wow.
Yes.
You should be doing a talk show.
Yeah.
Jeez, with your background.
Well, my sister and her husband are pilots, so
oh,
they get the freebies.
Both of them are pilots?
Her husband and her, yes.
That's impressive.
Don't ever get in a car with them. They'll kill you. But,
That's impressive.
Well, if you've been to 43 countries, what
yes.
What's the most unexpectedly interesting country you've been to?
That's hard to pick. I'll tell you my favorite.
Okay.
And I hadn't been there until about 4 years ago, and I've been back three times. It's Iceland. And I even listened to you guys when I was over in Iceland.
What?
Wow.
Yes, it's amazing.
Really?
What's amazing about it? What made you fall in love with it?
The beauty, the peace, peaceful beauty, and just the people. And it's just, I felt like I was on a different planet almost.
Yeah, it looks like you're on a different planet.
Yeah.
It looks really weird. Yeah. And then the Northern Lights.
Oh, it's beautiful. And not to change the subject, I hear you guys talking about Calumet City and Lansing, and I grew up in Lansing.
Oh, did you?
No, I'm kidding.
No.
Yeah. And I hear you talk about the Lands Theater once before, and I was cracking up.
Sure. Yeah, the Lands Theater was a beautiful theater. My brother lives in Munster, and I used to. For people who don't know, Lands Theater was in Lansing, and we used to go there, and they would show movies by request. You would fill out cards, and they would show the movies that got the most requests. And in the middle of the movie, they would pause the movie, and you'd go out in the lobby, and they had homemade goodies that you would have during the intermission. It was a wonderful theater.
It was great. It was great.
Well, it's great to meet you. I'm just, I want you to write that book, and we want to interview you on the radio when you write that book. Okay.
Anytime. I would love to.
Let's do it. Gosh.
Anytime.
I'm just pushing 40 years in this business, surviving gunshots and stabbings. And then it's like, how do you find the time to travel like you've done? That's very impressive, that alone.
That's what keeps me grounded.
Yep. You're probably right.
That's what keeps me grounded.
Well,
meeting new people, new adventures.
Stay healthy and get those 3 years under your belt so you can go travel
always.
Some more.
Okay.
I'm really glad you called, Dennis. It's a real
pleasure
meeting you.
To both of you.
You too.
And back at you.
Hang on, because we're going to be tickled to put you in a WGN official T-shirt.
And I have to ask you, do you have one of our Life After Dark CDs?
I do not, but I would love one.
Okay, we'd like to send you
one. One will be on its way to you. So hold on, and Julian will get some information from you off the air. What an interesting...
The more he talked, I'm like, we're not worthy. I just...
We have some wonderful listeners, but we have honestly enjoyed, and sometimes as we're driving home, we talk about some of the last callers and the interesting stories that they have.
Mm-hmm. We're batting 1,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And every week when we're here, we like to just open it up so we can put, we call it the cherry on top of our 5 hours.
Yeah. And this has been a fast 5 hours. Again, we're out of here. We're back next week, 9 o'clock, full show. We'll talk with Wally Podrajic from the Fest for Beatles Fans. Patrick will join us. He'll be back in California.
A listener quickly texted, when does hockey start? Don't worry about it. It's like the end of September.
Yeah.
Okay?
Boy, it's been a fast 5 hours. We got to get out of here. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Thanks to Julian and Bob and Ron and Gabe and most of all, you guys. Stay safe.